Tonight on The Download, we reload the news with Sun-Times reporter Tina Spondelis and WTTW reporter Amanda Vinicky. From the Metropolitan Planning Council President Mary Sue Barrett and Canadian folk musician The Weather Station. Now, here is your host, a man who is thinking about calling himself the thermometer, Justin Kaufman.
I would go with Weather Station, but it was taken. I gotta come up with something else weather related. Thermometer, barometric pressure. That could be my name, my Canadian folk name. Hey, everybody, it's The Download, 720 WGN. I am Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight here, beautiful Michigan Avenue in the city of Chicago. Excited to bring you some good stuff. Friday night, I always love broadcasting on Friday. I feel like as we get into the month of March, it gets a little bit closer to spring and summer where people have that Hope Springs Eternal vibe and are doing things with their weekend and not just hunkering down because it's cold outside. And I always feel on Friday, people might be stuck in traffic or they might be getting out and getting home and enjoying a cold one or doing something with their families. But if they have the radio on in the background and they're listening to The Download, I appreciate it. If you're at work like us, hey, hey, just another Friday, just another night. But we always appreciate you listening, and we have a great show lined up. We're going to reload this week's news with Tina Spondelis and Amanda Vinicky. Going to be here to do what we do every Friday, the big story, winners, losers, overreported, underreported, which story. We'll take you down the rabbit hole, and which story is going to be remembered from this week, 5, 10, 15, 20, 50, 500 years from now. It's a tough one. You know, this is one of those weeks where there's a lot going on, but not anything huge in particular. There was, I think it was last week or the week before, we had the Parkland shooting, which it was really hard to talk about anything else but that story, right? But this week, you've got trade wars. You've got Trump and Kushner, maybe. You've got locals, some of the governor polls and debates that are happening. And if you have suggestions, 312-981-7200, nominations, if you will. That's coming up at 8 o'clock. At 7:30, Mary Sue Barrett's back from the Metropolitan Planning Council. She's the president there. We're going to talk about infrastructure. We've been talking with the MPC for a couple of years now on the show. We did the How to Improve segment, how to improve the area, our municipalities. But now we've kind of switched to almost by land, by water, by sea, you know, whatever that is, if you're air, water, land. Like those topics. We did the great one. Cam Davis and Josh Ellis were here. We did the water conversation a couple weeks ago just about, and I learned something, that we don't have a national water policy. It's all states fend for yourselves, which is why you see drought-like conditions in some areas, why you see some, even in our municipalities, when some will take water from the lake, some don't, some take from wells, some charge like crazy. I mean, there's no standard. Well, tonight, let's talk about infrastructure, because we saw the president put forth an infrastructure proposal back in the middle of this past month, February, and it had a lot of words and jargon in there that really never got backed up. Essentially, the formula, I was reading a ton on this today, the formula that we used to do when it came to federal funding for infrastructure programs was matching. It was the federal government put this much up and states would match it. And in a strange way, think about that being reversed. Now it's going to be the federal government will match anything that states put up. So it's on states to come up with the primary funding. It used to be on the federal government to put up the primary funding and states. Anyway, the point being that this will change the way we look at infrastructure projects in the state of Illinois in the sense that we're going to have to raise the money for them first. And so that means taxes, that means tolls, that means this private-public partnership where we have the Burger King Kennedy, that kind of thing. So all those ideas are on the table, and no one wants to talk about that, and especially in the state of Illinois when we can't even balance a budget. But if we want to fix trains or deal with even our water systems or deal with our expressways and roads, expressways are federal, but there's going to have to be more money culled from places it hasn't been before. So think about that. If you have any suggestions, it is an election season. We should get to the gubernatorial candidates in the studio and just be like, so what's the ideas here, guys? Like, instead of a formal debate, I just love to be like, all right, anything, guys, roll up the sleeves, whiteboard style. I'm going to write it down like we're doing a brainstorming session. Wouldn't that be a great way to do it? That's the one thing. I digress because we got a lot to do tonight. I hate to get off track so early. But I feel like that would there needs to be a strong look at how we do debates and town forums and all town halls when it comes to elections. I want other forms. I want other a game show, perhaps. Or, like I just said, a brainstorm where we all get in the room. Something that showcases more than people standing behind a podium going, thank you for that question. And I really want to say thank you. This is amazing. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for the question. Yes, we have big challenges in the state, and we're going to get to them. Thank you. A CTA bus pass is $25. Thank you.
Right, yeah. Because like Dave McKinney did that on the Price is Right thing on this last debate.
It's, I mean, just inject some energy into these things. Let's have some fun with these guys. Anyway, we're not doing that tonight.
But you know, like when you see, like, you know, like there was one point where there was a debate, and I was like, you know, Reverend Al Sharpton, he seems all right, you know, because he can charm you during a debate.
Well, it was Harold Washington, if you remember, in the primary debate against Jane Byrne and against who was the incumbent, and I forgot his name. I think it was Mayor Daley, M. Daley. Is there an M. Daley? Does that make sense? Nah, no one remembers that guy. That when he was younger, and that's a famous debate in which both of them went first. I forgot the issue, but they both went first, and they couldn't have been more pat answers, dumb politics answers. And they got to Harold Washington, goes, these are the guys I'm running. Like whatever he said, he got the whole crowd whipped up, and that was a lot of why he really captured, because of his personality, the electorate. So anyway, maybe we'll work on that. Come up with some. We only got a couple weeks here. We got to get into it. Coming up a little bit later, the Canadian folk outfit, The Weather Station, Tamara Lindemann is getting great. I mean, if you're into that, if you're into folk music and you're into indie rock, and then you know The Weather Station are coming to Metro coming up on, I think it's next week. So Tamara Lindemann is going to join us to talk about her great career and her great music that they're producing. The Weather Station is a hot. I mean, they win awards like crazy up in Canada for every time they put something together. But and they do have, obviously, crossover appeal as they're playing the States and they're playing Metro. So we'll talk with Tamara Lindemann coming up in 9 o'clock hour. And then we'll play Never Have I Ever tonight in honor of Jamaica and in honor of the fact that I now went snorkeling. It was, you know, remember we used to play Never Have I Ever, and I'd always say, like, I've never have I ever gone snorkeling. Well, I did it. I went. So we got to come up with new ones for pizza tonight.
And you mentioned one to me earlier in the week, something that you have never done.
What was that?
The Southside Irish Parade.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Which we're going to talk about next week, which was great. Yeah. There you go. That replaces snorkeling. The Southside Irish Parade. Now I have to go to that. I have to go. Putting me on the spot. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martier and Roger Badish. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. So stay with us. It's The Download here in 720 WGN. I am Justin Kaufman, and it's time to carry out. All right, here are today's top stories. Trade war! Trade war! Since yesterday, the markets have reacted to the president's proposal to slap a tariff on foreign steel. In doing so, the EU today said if Trump does that, then they're going to slap a tariff on things like bourbon and blue jeans and orange juice and rice and corn and pretty much everything that America produces, and so on and so forth, till we lose that nice little weekly bump in our paychecks because everything now will cost more. But can I play devil's advocate here real quick? Hear me out. If the Dow is at record levels, highest it's ever been, right? Wouldn't this be the time for the president to approach tariffs and writing what he says has been unfair trade deals in this country for years? If the market reacts and we lose, say, I don't know, 1,000 points, 2,000 points, we're still over 20,000. So it seems like the right time to start a trade war. Or, I don't know if you're mad. And chance of USA, USA, right before a midterm. They never hurt, right? Except the people that are chanting, but that's here nor there. Speaking of war, I was busy yesterday watching the Cats lose to Penn State in the Big Ten tournament, but did I read this right? That Russian leader Vladimir Putin bragged of a nuclear weapon that could avoid our defenses and blow up Florida? Really? And this was unprompted? Oh, snap. No, you didn't. I'm sure Trump plugged his phone in to get as much juice as he could for his epic Twitter rant. Kim Jong-un is child's play. Let's open it up right now. Haven't looked in a minute. So the trade war. Alex Baldwin. Mediocre trade war. What? Nothing? He didn't say anything? Come on. Even you, the most ardent Trump fan listening right now, even you, you got to be confused on why Trump hasn't said anything about a foreign leader saying he would blow up Florida. Mar-a-Lago. Nothing? I don't know, man. Also, the Georgia State Legislature took away fuel tax breaks to Delta after the airline said that they were discontinuing the NRA member discount. And today, Delta revealed that they've only sold 13 tickets that were discounted. That's it. All of this hoo-ha over 13 tickets, which is probably less than $1,000. I don't even know what to say about it. I really don't even know what the joke is. It's kind of like Life of Brian, I guess. But we should have the right to have babies. Yeah, but we're men, we can't have babies. But we should have the right to. It's ridiculous. Boy, oh boy, the city keeps stepping in it over the case of the police shooting of Quintonio LeGuerre back in 2015. Did you see this? This was the same case where the city went to sue the family for the son's wrongful death, which Emmanuel then apologized for. Now it's come out that during the civil trial, city lawyers asked LeGuerre's mom if she was a prostitute. I'm not a lawyer, but the little I've learned on the street is that question's not a good question to ask anybody ever. Right? The city can't win on this one. They just keep stepping in it. What else here? Did I read this right? The Wrigley Building is for sale. The Wrigley Building right here on Michigan Avenue for $200 million. The owners bought the building for $60 million back in 2011. That's 7 years ago. I mean, Chicago is appreciating, don't get me wrong, but by $140 million? I hope it goes through, though, and they get the cash just so I can list my townhome for 800% more than I bought it for. Hey, don't look at me. Look at the Wrigley Building. It ruined the whole market. And I've got granite countertops. What's it got? This Sunday's a big one for the state of Indiana. For the first time, the state will allow liquor stores to sell booze on Sundays. Yep, and that's our news report for 1929. Next up is Something Up with the Stock Market. And we feature a new bread line that's all the rage in Bucktown. And the Cubs, it's been over 20 years since they won a World Series. Probably next year. Yeah. In weather, nice day compared to what's going on in Boston and the Northeast, as I like to say. In sports, let's start with the only winner we have right now, and that's the Ramblers of Loyola University Chicago. They beat Northern Iowa today in the first round of the Missouri Valley Conference in St. Louis. It's called Arch Madness. See what they did there. The Ramblers sit at 26-5, probably one win away from getting a nod to the big dance. They win two more, and they're automatically in. Last year was Northwestern's year. This year, Loyola. Gosh, wouldn't it be great if the local teams could do it all at once, though? Does it really have to be one team, and that's it? The Illini, DePaul, Northwestern, Truman College, anybody. Of course, the Ramblers play the only other Illinois team with a chance, Bradley. Oh, come on. Ain't that a kick in the... Let's move on to the Bears. Even though the new NFL season, i.e. free agency, doesn't begin for a couple weeks, more and more names are being floated as possible targets to join the team. The Bears have $80 million in cap space, so they better not miss or do this. You know, we're signing a blocking tight end for one season. Must be, you know, thrifty. He's going to get $250 plus base. You know, none of that. I want, forget thrifty. Thrifty got us 5-11. Spend foolishly, right? The Miami Dolphins wide receiver Jarvis Landry wants out. And I guess Honey Badger, the safety in Arizona, he's unhappy. Boom, snatch him up too. And then get the corner from the Patriots, Malcolm Butler, who was benched during the Super Bowl. Then get that tight end Jimmy Graham. And then draft that Notre Dame guard and a couple linebackers who can rush the passers. Did I just fix the Bears? I think I just fixed the Bears. What else? The Blackhawks play the Kings tomorrow. The Bulls play the Mavericks now. In spring training news, White Sox GM Rick Hahn was on Cochran this morning. He said star phenom Lewis Robert was cleared to play after getting tagged hard in the head the other day. Ouch. Not a great spring training health-wise for the young Sox. Jake Berger out for the year. Eloy Jimenez out for a couple more games with knee soreness. Now Robert gets hit in the head. All right. You know what? None of these guys play anymore this spring. We know what they can do. A ton of Tyler Saladino for the rest of the month. That's it. He can play all four infield positions. We're ready for opening day. Cubs manager Joe Maddon's tinkering again. Today he had Jason Hayward lead off. I love it. I don't know what Hayward's on-base percentage is. It's probably terrible, but he's definitely not excelling in any sort of cleanup role, so I don't know. He could be Fowler-like. Why not? I like it. Also, I'd like to go on record saying that I don't like what baseball is doing to Jake Arrieta. I know that he wants more years than he should, but he should get it. Just for, I don't know, just for being Jake Arrieta. Like, I feel bad. I'm not a big Cubs fan, but that dude was a big part of not just the Cubs, but Major League Baseball for 2 or 3 years. He was the face. And now they don't want to pay him. He's a free agent. No team. The Nationals have said, well, we're backing off Jake Arrieta. That's the big news today. I can't wait till the Nationals get beat in the playoffs when Gio Gonzalez gives up 6 runs in the first so I can go, ha-ha. Should have given Arrieta 5 years. You're stuck on 4. There's other people who say, oh, well, why doesn't Arrieta? No. You know how much money they gave Steven Strasburg? What's he ever done? Arrieta's a World Series champ. All right, I'm done. In fantasy baseball news, though, I've already mock drafted 15 times. It's an essential part of being a back-to-back champion, people. 4-time champion in 10 years. The key to all of it, Matt Holliday. Just throwing it out there. That's what you got to do. And finally tonight, Uber is having so much success with Uber Pool, their cheapest ride-sharing option, that it's offering up a new option that's even cheaper. Yep. Now you'll have the option of Uber X, Uber Pool, and Uber calls 3 times and then cancels, and then you still get charged for the ride. It's a working title. Not to be outdone, Lyft is also offering a cheaper alternative. It's called Just Meet Me at My House. Rideshare humor. That's the carryout for March 2nd, 2018. It's March, so it's time for corned beef. We're making one huge pot. It's going to last the entire month, so get it while it's fresh. Literally. All right, coming up, infrastructure with Mary Sue Barrett from the Metropolitan Planning Council. At 8 o'clock, we reload this week's news with Amanda Vinicky and Tina Svondelis. Great show tonight. It's the Download 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
Are you suggesting there's collusion in Major League Baseball against one Mr. Jake Arrieta?
He must have really made people mad by posing naked in that ESPN Sports magazine.
Well, I mean, he doesn't have a typical pitcher's body either. I mean, no, the guy's kind of ripped.
I was reading a bunch about it today, and I guess I see the fact that he's 32 years old, and he wants 5 to 7 years, and Major League Baseball's like, we're not doing that anymore. No. We just want to give you one. And I don't know, at a certain point, you're like, if anybody should get 5 years, it should be Jake Arrieta, right? That's just my point. He's earned it.
Okay, but the dynamics of baseball have changed as well, and they're now looking at where a guy like Arrieta is at in his career, and they're saying, you know, I'll give you 1 to 2, but I'm not giving you 5, because don't forget, that money's guaranteed.
I know. You know what, though? I mean, at a certain point, Jake Arrieta, and maybe this is just part of it. I mean, Jake Arrieta became more than just a baseball pitcher for the Chicago Cubs. He was the face of baseball for 2 years with that beard and the whole bit. So I don't know. I think there should be some sort of payback, but maybe the key is, maybe this is more above our pay grade. Maybe what they need to do is get rid of those guaranteed contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Like do it football style.
Don't disagree.
Where they say they're going to pay you $800 million, but they never do.
Right.
You know, that classic labor move. Thank you, Rob. It is the Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 8 o'clock, we reload this week's news with Amanda Vinicky and Tina Svondelis. 312-981-7200. Love that segment. Love talking about what happened this week. This is going to be some good conversations. So many things that happened this week that may not rise to the level of, wow, that is a huge story, but are very interesting, intriguing, and set up stories for later down the road. So we'll have that conversation coming up at 8 o'clock. Well, infrastructure's front and center this week as the mayor announced a sprawling plan to renovate O'Hare Airport. This would be a monster project that would be funded in part by raising carrier costs and gate fees and borrowing against that new revenue. So in other words, no taxpayer dollars? I put a question mark on that because I really don't know. Also, flooding in Kankakee County last week, potholes popping up after snow, and of course, President Trump's infrastructure proposal last month, which is big on pushing public-private partnerships and getting the state to pay for more than usual. This state? The state of Illinois? Uh-oh. So if we want to get some projects funded, the formula on how we match federal money will force us, the state of Illinois, to come up with new revenue. That can mean anything from tolls on the Ike to a higher gas tax to naming rights. Get ready for the, it's an hour from the Jane Byrne Interchange on the Burger King Gatorade Monster.com Kennedy Expressway. I have a feeling that's coming. In studio with me tonight to continue our look at how to improve our state and tackle the challenges in front of us when it comes to air, water, and land is Mary Sue Barrett, the president of the Metropolitan Planning Council. Mary Sue, good to see you.
Same here, Justin. Great to be back.
All right. So I kid about that, but I want to get into that. You know, really, this conversation, I want to get to some of the O'Hare stuff as well, but this really comes off of the Trump infrastructure proposal that came out last week or last month that really looked at changing the formula that federal and state matching dollars used to work with. I mean, the idea that, if the state raised this much money, the federal government would match it, and how much federal government money was being given to the states, that's all changing, and that's really at the heart of what this proposal is about.
That's right. And of course, if you're a commuter, all you care about is getting the projects done. But during the campaign, then candidate Trump talked about $1 trillion, which none of us can quite get our brain around. And now this proposal is $1.5 trillion.
Wow.
Sounded encouraging. You know, those of us who live and work in cities and complicated regions like this global Chicagoland region perked up. But then the details came out, and as suspected, it really is about counting the total dollars, not new dollars from the federal government. So he's really looking to localities and states to step up. We've actually been in that environment, in that in that mode for a while. I call it the self-help era. The problem is that Illinois has not been getting with the program in the self-help era.
Because
more than 30 states have.
I was going to say, other states have. They've already accepted this is the future of the way that government funding is going to go, and we're going to change and adapt. Illinois is not there.
No, we're not. We're dragging our feet, and as the transportation crossroads of America, that has a huge price. One of the things the Metropolitan Planning Council does is put out analyses of the cost of various challenges. We've got a new report out last year about the cost of segregation.
Right.
A couple years earlier, the cost of gridlock, the cost of congestion. And so we know that inaction actually does drain our pocketbooks, but there's a sense of, you know, finger pointing of who's to blame. If anything, President Trump's package is a wake up call to say, okay, enough of the finger pointing. We have to come up with the revenues locally, and we're going to have to look at all options. That is about making this economy start humming. Remember that this is in the context of a state that's the slowest growing in the country.
Yeah. And that's used for political points when it comes to election season. But you can, but as you set it up right here, you can understand why. We're not playing by the rules that have been put forth for the 21st century. All right. O'Hare Airport's interesting, though, because this is a story that came out this week where a lease that has been in place or an agreement's been in place with American Airlines and United Airlines for 35 years or something like that, right? And it's coming up, and Mayor Emanuel, he seems to be in a position, not unlike what we're talking about, some of the other states. This is a progressive look at renovating something that we need and doing it in a way that gets the airlines to actually pay for it, the airport to pay for itself.
It is a great example and one we can draw lessons from for the rest of our transportation infrastructure. O'Hare International Airport is a gem. Company after company cites O'Hare and the access to markets and locations as a primary reason why they're choosing to stay or expand or come here. So Mayor Emanuel and the Aviation Commissioner, Ginger Evans, really saw that once the runway reconstruction was moving towards completion, that the terminal side, the gates, all had to be modernized. And it's been a long time, so it's a very complicated plan, but this is something that the city can be the architect of, can push it forward,
right.
And it's gonna take a long time, but we can figure out a way to finance that. that's the kind of approach that really the federal government is signaling to states and localities. We need to do that for our transit, for our bridges, for our roads, and for all of the other types of infrastructure like walking and biking that people want.
And there's such a correlation, an economic correlation, because when you talk about renovating O'Hare Airport, what you're really talking about when you're adding gates and refurbishing the terminal is being able to bring new customers through, meaning international. That's the, I heard the story today that I didn't even think about that, that that is where the rage is at when it comes to money, is international travel and travelers coming through. So if more gates open up for international travel, that means more tourism, that means more economic opportunity, that could be more business that would locate in here in Chicago. There's a lot more than just making sure that the K wing of the Terminal 3 has a new Cinnabon.
Yes, it's not just about a good place to grab something before you get on your flight, right, or a pretty terminal. That's important too. If you've traveled internationally, you know that there's some airports that are very appealing to the traveling public, the flying public. But this is really about business. This is about dollars. In recent years, the city of Chicago has seen an uptick of visitors from 50 million to 53 million this past year. And that is, you can tie that directly back to improved access to markets, some of the amenities that have been enhanced, our Riverwalk, all of that together. Companies that are looking at locating here, whether it's the Amazon headquarters search, or less high profile, they all need access to these markets. Mm-hmm. And O'Hare is the first piece. But then let's connect it to, once you land at O'Hare, this amazing transit system that we have, but that we've been neglecting, is critical to getting people around the region, but especially to the central area where it's so pivotal and moving about two-thirds of the workers.
Okay, here's what we'll do. Let's take a quick break. We come back. I want to talk about that transit system. And it hasn't been in neglect, and it seems to be, when we talk about transit funding, especially for the CTA here in Chicago, it almost feels like it's the old model. As we're waiting for federal funding to come in to extend the Red Line, we're waiting for there's a modernization program, but we need the money from, I mean, we hear that over and over and over. And the question is, if we look at the way that business is moving in the 21st century when it comes to infrastructure, are there opportunities there to think about when it comes to rehabbing the CTA? Mary Sue Barrett's my guest tonight. She's the president of the Metropolitan Planning Council. We'll take a quick break, come back, continue. Stay with us. It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Mary Sue Barrett in the studio with me. She's the president of the Metropolitan Planning Council. Talking about infrastructure tonight here on the Download. We get together once. The Metropolitan Planning Council, you guys have been great. We've had a great relationship talking about these big ticket items and big issues in the state of Illinois in our Midwest region and solutions to move forward on. When we talk about infrastructure, well, here's a great way to, as we talked about, getting to the CTA. One of the things, though, the CTA seems to always be in a situation where when they need to fix something or think long term, it's a capital project. It's something that they need to raise money quick, and if they can't get the federal funds, oh geez, this is on the, we might not be able to modernize the Brown Line, all that kind of stuff. But as you think about sustainable revenue or this concept of new places to get money from, wouldn't it be smart, not unlike we do with schools, that there should be a budget that would say, okay, there's money, maybe it comes from tax, maybe it's an extra penny here or gas tax, whatever it is, but there's a space in which every year there's money set aside for projects like what I just mentioned?
What a radical idea, Justin, to have a game plan for things you know are going to be cropping up. The big ticket is actually maintaining what we've got. Not terribly exciting, but really critical to keeping the economy growing, which is something we haven't been able to do in this region. So maintaining, and then the projects that get people excited, of course, are the new ones. And you're right, if we're waiting for Washington or waiting for Springfield's peaks and valleys, we're paying too big of a price. So when you ask people about their hassles, which is something we're doing right now with a social media campaign called #BustedCommute, please send in your pictures, your videos, your stories on your favorite form of social media, and we're going to use that information to create this drumbeat for our local elected officials and our state leaders to get with this program of self-help. On transit, there are all sorts of ways you can measure the impact of a delay. When you can't get on that train, you have to wait for the third red line, or the blue line is broken down again. This is because of deferred maintenance. And so if we have a predictable revenue stream, the way any company would,
right,
we're going to be able
any
to
household
run,
would.
Yep. We're right. going to be able to run a smarter city, region, and state. And so that kind of mindset shift.
But why is that not in place? Is it just because it's such a big political risk for leaders to say, oh, we're going to have to put a tax in for this, and maybe it's going to grow and grow and grow, but we may not need it. Like, why wouldn't the state of Illinois have an area that is for routine maintenance when it comes to these kind of projects?
You know, I think we're inching our way towards that, and because we're an independent, nonpartisan group. We work with everyone. Yeah. I was a co-chair of Governor Rauner's infrastructure transition team. We work with elected officials of all stripes, near and far. And they all care about this issue. What we need to do is to create the political will. That's what Busted Commute is in part about, and show people the benefit. If I show you that you can save 8 minutes on your commute every day.
Yeah, you'd pay for it.
That's
right.
That's
I'd
worth
pay
paying for.
I'd pay 10
Absolutely.
Cents for that. Okay, so let's get to the I was kind of making the joke about public-private partnerships and what we can expect from, like, let's just use roads as an example. But we've seen public-private partnerships in selling the Skyway,
mm-hmm.
and we've seen those tolls go up and up and up. But we saw as well, like, is it possible that we might see more toll roads in the area, maybe on the Stevenson or the Ike, that weren't there before, with the goal of raising revenue for projects like we're talking about?
Yes, it's possible. The idea is to give people lots of choices. So when bike lanes are put in place or dedicated lanes for buses like we have downtown with bus rapid transit on Washington and on Madison, it's about giving everyone more choices. So if there's going to be a tolled lane in the future on the Stevenson or the Eisenhower, giving people an option to pay a little bit more to get there faster and predictably, again, that's a choice that many people are going to be quick to sign up for.
Yeah, I agree. But if I the problem I have, just personally, I'm going to use myself as an Illinois resident, and if I have to take that Skyway and I'm getting to that toll at right at the end where it begins before the bridge, and I'm paying $7 to get on it, and every year it just seems to be going up and up and up, and I realize it's because it's a private road now, I feel it's the exact opposite feeling you're talking about. I don't feel like it's going anywhere. I just feel like I'm being taken advantage of.
Well, the problem is we haven't been straight with people about what things cost.
Yeah, right.
And so if maintaining a huge bridge costs hundreds of millions of dollars, we haven't been paying it for a long time, yes, it's gonna cost a lot to catch up. But again, let's put it in the context of this economic destiny. We're this global powerhouse. We've got companies that are looking to come downtown to expand, and to do that, we have to make this a system that works.
Yeah.
Think about the city of Chicago's North Lakefront. The Red-Purple Line modernization is one that we got a little bit of a slug of money right at the end of the Obama administration, but that's not the full price tag. We have to come up with more self-help measures. The city of Chicago gets a lot of credit for this value capture. It's an innovative financing tool that takes advantage of markets, real estate markets, getting stronger, near transit, which is where people want to be, and uses some of that to pay for the transit system.
Well,
so we've got to use all these tools.
Yeah, and we'll continue this conversation because I'm truly interested in why this issue is not bigger in the election cycle. Obviously, it's something that I think a lot of people think, oh. But it's not, especially if we can dress it up and be in a position where it can affect our lives. Mary Sue Barrett is the president of the Metropolitan Planning Council. She joins us once in a while. I get a lot of people from the Metropolitan Planning Council, but I don't get you. So it's great to have you back here on the show, talking infrastructure and what we might be seeing here in the near future. Mary Sue, good to see you.
Thanks, Justin. Let's get it done.
Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, time to reload this week's news. I'm very excited about this week. Amanda Vinicky and Tina Svondelis are here. Amanda, political reporter for WTTW's Chicago Tonight. Good to see you.
Thank you. You too.
Tina Svondelis from the political reporter Chicago Sun Times. Good to see you.
Nice to see you.
I'm
going to
see you on Sunday as well when we take it to the attorney general candidates.
Right, that's what the
debate.
Thing says. Take it to take them.
It's the ticket to them. Debate. No, we're having a debate at Cards Against Humanity, and Tina is on the panel, and I'm the MC. I'm the moderator. Person that when one of the candidates goes too long, I have a buzzer or something that zaps them real quick.
You should. It's at Cards Against Humanity. Make it more game show like. Bring a buzzer.
What about a bell?
Yeah, a bell would
like
be
like an
good.
Annoying bell, like at the DMV. Ding.
What is more annoying, the bell or when a candidate filibusters and doesn't answer a question asked at them at a forum just before the primary?
Multiple reasons to ring the bell.
I am more partial to a buzzer. Like something that you, I'd like to tape it to their hands or something so when they get shocked, a little shock.
A little Pavlovian.
They would love that. You should try that out.
Maybe that's a good bit. Maybe they could start at the beginning. That would be a good way to start. All right, I don't want to give away too many bits. We got a big reload tonight. Biggest story, winners, losers, overreported, underreported. What story took you down the rabbit hole? Which story is going to be remembered from this week in 5, 10, 15, 20, 55, 75, 100, 500 years from this week? Let's start with you, Amanda. What do you got for biggest story this week?
You know, I am going to go with the Janus case before the U.S. Supreme Court, just because that maybe right now is not the... Let me throw my own response under the bus here. But right now it might not be because it was arguments before the Supreme Court. We don't have a decision yet. But
the decision's coming in June. Right.
Well, we don't quite know when. But it's supposed to be by about then. But the... kind of expectation is that this is going to be a decision that may well really dismantle unions. And so that will have huge ramifications for both the workforce, for union members, and frankly, for politics, because after Citizens United, you already saw really the dynamic flip. This even more would stand to take out a key fundraiser for Democrats.
That's what I was going to say. So what's at stake here is that essentially it's saying that you don't have to pay union dues to be part of collective bargaining. Right?
Correct.
Is that the concept? So that's what's being argued in front of the Supreme Court, saying right now you have to pay a union dues if you want to.
You have to pay a fee. Let's be clear. If you're a member of the union, you pay dues, and for those dues, you get all of the advantages of truly union membership, and that is your choice to join or not in a state like Illinois. Right now, there is a requirement for these for employees of state government, which is what this case is on, that they do, however, even if you don't want to be a part of the union and therefore the bargaining, and the political advocacy and the other kind of union-oriented things that go with it, you do need to pay a fee because there is law that says that unions can do collective bargaining on behalf of all workers.
Well, that's the whole concept.
So your pay,
right?
Your holiday, the whole concept for it. And the thought is that everybody should have to pay. The argument against it is that, hey, I don't believe in what the union is doing, even per se, on collective bargaining. The other side of it would be that then you become a free rider, because if you don't have to pay, who's not going to say less of their paycheck should go to a union? But what does that do for the unions? It definitely, of course, weakens.
Well, let's bring in Tina. Tina, this is a big part of the turnaround agenda that the Governor Rauner put forth early. This has been a case that's been around for a couple years now and has been moving its way to the Supreme Court. And this was the first time that the governor had gone to Washington, D.C. in his term. That was a strange thing. That's what brought him out, to listen to the
to stand in front of the Supreme Court.
He's feeling pretty confident, because right now it seems with Judge Gorsuch that there is this I guess you would say a foregone conclusion that it could go in the way of going against these fees.
Right. So if this works out for him, he will have a big success on his turnaround agenda, and people will know about that nationally. So I think that's a little bit of why he went out there. He went out to a dinner, I believe, on Sunday night with the First Lady. He met with Trump, which is rare. If you hear any interviews with us with him, we're constantly asking him about his relationship with President Trump, and we don't get very much. We get some criticism, usually not a lot.
I think he's said the name Donald Trump or President Trump, twice?
We were
maybe
so excited when he did it. We said, did you just say his name? And he said, yes, I did. So it was very exciting for all of us. But yes, I do think that this will be a major success for him if it does pan out. And I think it will be well known throughout the country. And he's looking at this as something very good for him, as one of his successes.
Is this, I mean, this plays obviously is huge for the state of Illinois, but this also plays to a bunch of different states that have union.
Oh my gosh. I mean, yes, this would have ramifications right now, because Rauner has, again, made this such a part of his agenda. And he says it's one of the reasons that people should reelect him, because once and if he does have this ability, he could institute some of the changes that he's been saying would really help Illinois go down this path of economic prosperity. Again, of course, Democrats say that it would do the exact opposite, and then instead it would hurt the middle class and basically dismantle it. But of course, it has wider ramifications than that. You look at right-to-work states where you've seen union membership significantly dwindle, and you look at there was some very good reporting by both The Guardian and by The New York Times. And part of this, I think we've already, frankly, in Illinois at least, already known that the group that is behind and truly funding this case, at least a couple of them, one of them is an offshoot of the Illinois Policy Institute. And of course, this is this sort of conservative advocacy
group. So of
course,
it's got political roots,
and so being funded by, for example, people like Illinois resident Dick Uihlein and other ultra wealthy conservatives as part of a decades long effort to try and gain more power. So we could see a true shift in politics when you take away a funder.
Yeah, put the politics aside for a second. It's a head scratcher to me, and I'm not a judge. Sometimes I think I am, but you know, you put it aside, and I said, well, if you're going to be the benefit of collective bargaining, if it's a union is coming in to negotiate with an employer to make the everyone's pay go up, then it seems like everyone needs to pay into that. I mean, it seems like it's a little bit of a, you know.
I mean, so you're the free rider. You believe in the free rider.
No, I believe in the idea that everyone should pay if you're going to get that service. Right. So I get a little bit of head scratch of why anyone would judge the other way to say, no, you can have, you know, you don't have to be in that to get the benefits of that. I don't know.
The argument that is being made in court primarily is that it is a First Amendment issue, that you are taking away someone's right to free speech by forcing them to give money that they have earned to an entity with which they do not agree. There has been some confusion here because, again, it's the difference of separating union dues from this fee that is supposed to pay for the collective bargaining. And the individual at the heart of this case, he's a child care specialist, Mark Janis, has kind of made some confusing statements that I've seen reported. And then he you know, talks about, well, I don't like their political activity. I don't like that the unions voted for Democrats. But that's by law, and there are supposed to be audits that look at unions' financing. Right. To make sure that the fair share dues, again, separate from, or fair share fees, agency fees, separate from the union dues, are going only to the bargaining part and not to the political part.
That's I would just assume that. It just kind of like seems common sensey.
But, you know, I just want to say real quickly, because you say, you know, separate the politics from it. But really, to me, that is what you can't do, because it can very easily turn into there is something to be said for what it means for union membership and what have you, but it is so much bigger than that, because you look at money in politics. Yeah. We see, if you turn on the TV right now, you're seeing what money pays for, and that is commercials. And that is why, for example, the attorney general's race that you'll be working on this weekend, half the people probably don't even know that there are candidates, because they don't have enough money to get on a TV with a commercial. And that is what this race could this decision could change. You can't separate
it. We've got much more to do tonight. Both of our biggest stories fit into so many different categories, Tina, so we'll bounce to the next segment. We'll take a quick break here. We'll come back and we'll start our winners and losers. Tina Svondelis and Amanda Vinicky in studio tonight. Reload the News, 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. Tina Svondelis from the Sun-Times, Amanda Vinicky from Channel 11, WTTW. In studio tonight, we just got through biggest. We've got other, I had Trade Wars, you have North Pole. All that shows up. This is the beauty of Reload. It could be in every category. But let's go to winners. This week was a big week for gun control advocacy, and that played out in Springfield. Both of you cover Springfield politics for your respective organizations. And this was a week where we saw some talk out of Washington, but we saw action in Springfield.
We did see action in Springfield, and that was actually going to the governor's desk, a measure that would create a state license for gun dealers. Other measures are still winding their way through Springfield, but definitely have momentum on their side. That is, for example, raising the age to be able to buy 50 caliber weapons and ammunition from 18 to 21, mm-hmm. A measure that would allow either a police officer or a relative of somebody who's believed to be a danger to others and or to themselves to get a court order of protection. Okay. So those are just a couple of really a handful of gun control measures that passed in Springfield.
You guys cover Springfield. I only know a little bit of the talk around it. It's always been hard to pass gun control measure because Democrats from downstate have more interest in gun ownership than Democrats maybe on the northern side of the state. So
And Republicans, too.
But on the Democrat side, it's not just a unified party when it comes to gun control.
That's just the general gun control issue. A lot of these happen for political reasons. So we saw a bump stock bill last year after the Las Vegas massacre, which was tied to an assault weapon ban, which we knew would not pass. So we knew it wasn't a real bill. So there's just times where people are pushing their political bills and they're not really intent on passing them. But this week we did see a bump stock bill from the same state rep who introduced it last year, and he had, you know, negotiated with Republicans to get support and it passed. So there are ways to get it through if you kind of negotiate with the people that are not on board. So this Commander Paul Bauer bill, actually, I don't see that happening, but we'll see. But people say that they believe that these things are already illegal.
This is the body armor and the
large capacity magazine.
So those are already illegal, I believe. So they're pairing them together, obviously in honor of an amazing police commander. But that is also being viewed as kind of a more political bill. And that was not called at all this week. Huh. And we're not sure what will happen with that.
And then the bill that did get passed is on the governor's desk. Is there any thought of which way he's going to go? What do you guys think?
Well, what we've always said is he's an avid hunter, so we know that he does enjoy hunting. He has guns. He shoots a lot of birds. We know this. He talks about it. He wears hunting vests. So there is a gun control issue. It's actually really dangerous probably for him to do anything with it at this point. There's 19 days left before the primary.
So he just sits on it?
He doesn't have to act on it yet. But, I mean, even going into the general election, that could present a problem for him, as you have in Chicago, and particularly with suburban women, support for these restrictions. And yet, downstate, that could very much, of course, hurt him. And already, they're not all that pleased because I think you could see the effects of the budget impasse everywhere in the state, but particularly keenly felt in areas outside of Chicago where, for example, public universities are the only game literally in town and therefore bring devastation for communities that only have state facilities. So it does present him in a political trick box. So let's be clear, that is very much on both sides of the issue. Yes, there is momentum following the shooting at in Florida, and there is most definitely sincerity on certain lawmakers' parts about wanting to do something to make change.
Yeah.
At the very same time, there's a heck of a lot of politics behind it.
Oh my gosh,
Democrats intending to make life as difficult as possible as they can for Governor Bruce Rauner, and that is part of the timing. The bump stock example that Tina just gave.
And the mayor today just released something saying, you know, everyone's urging him to sign it, but obviously they do want it signed, but they also would love if he signed it in this 19-day span before the March 20th primary.
It reminds me, I mean, this obviously there's more political will around this, but we just had the conversation this week about, I think it was House Bill 40.
Yeah, it's the same
concept. The Democrats want to trap him in some sort of way that essentially he has to choose a side.
Yes, it's a trap. And think about it, on both of these, Democrats did have super majorities. And before Rauner took the governor's office, you had Democrats in the executive mansion as well. And you didn't see any sort of movement. Same with, for example, increases in the minimum wage. I mean, you could go down a list of things that Democrats had the ability, literally had the votes to do, but instead waited.
Interesting. And, you know, the other part of it kind of both of our lists, all of our lists really had winners and losers. But when we talk about the Paul Simon Institute polls this week, the governor's race, attorney general, we start to see who the front runners are, even though there's a lot of questions around these polls, about whether it's likely voters or registered voters, whatever that means. But it saw that both Governor Rauner had a sizable lead over challenger Jeannie Ives. We had Dan Proft on Wednesday, and he said, no, that's actually his point was she was down 50 points. Now she's only down 20. This is shining.
I mean, it's embarrassing to have a sitting governor, an incumbent that has put that much money behind him, to have Ives be as close as she is. It's still, if you believe that
still
poll,
long way to go,
is going to be
say the same for Pritzker, and that he's put in so much money and he's not too far ahead
of
the rest.
He's closer and only 10 points. Is that reverberating through Springfield, that poll, to say now we know who the front runners are? There's a little bit on paper and
I feel
the fight's
it's
on.
More about the voters. I feel like the politicians don't trust the polls as much. Yesterday at the debate, the gubernatorial debate, T.O. Hardeman was talking about how he always polled at 5% in 2014, and he ended up getting like 28% or something, almost 30%.
A lot of it really depends. I mean, especially in the primary, who comes out to the polls. So when you talk about the difference between registered and likely, yeah, and if you're a likely voter, what sort of motivation do you have right now? If you have, let's say, somebody who last time around maybe did vote for Bruce Rauner in the general election because they were a frustrated Democrat, they'd be more apt this time around to pull a Democratic ballot. You can only take one or the other. So there is a lot to be said for not yet buying into these polls because you're not going to probably have a very high turnout, and the people who are turning out are going to be particularly motivated for one candidate or the other.
And the big takeaway, I mean, you can talk all you want about who's front runner and what the percentages are, but the takeaway in all these polls has been when they go to the general and they have the either candidate, Pritzker, Kennedy, or Biss, talk about going against Rauner, they all are projected to win in big numbers.
And those polls also show that he's faring worse than President Trump in Illinois. There's several polls that have shown that in terms of the approval rating of the governor. President Trump has a higher approval rating than Governor Rauner in several polls. So that's interesting as well.
Interesting. Bad for the governor. But you know who is less popular than the... Guess who? Come on, Justin.
Who's less popular than the governor?
Oh,
what's that
guy's name? So it goes Trump, Rauner, and then...
Who's that one guy I see on commercials every... loves this guy. What's this guy's name? Mike Madigan.
You got it. You got it.
Hashtag Blaine Madigan.
He's least popular of all.
Well, he's in our loser category, but it is interesting that somehow or another, I had the chance last night. We had a Blackhawks game. I went home and I caught the 10 o'clock news, and right after the 10 o'clock news was done, they did a slate of 4 minutes of every commercial you could think of from every race that's happening, and I would say 90% of them said Mike Madigan. I mean, it was even Democrats. I mean, it was like everybody had the boogeyman being Mike Madigan. He has really seemed to be the one who's the galvanizing around him.
Bruce Rauner did that. And so now he started that trend, and now everyone is following, defending him, asking questions about him at every single debate. It's this whole narrative that they created.
You saw it last night at the gubernatorial. It's so surprising.
Tonight, as we're talking, I think there's another one. I believe that came up yet again.
And, I mean, he's the chairman of the Democratic Party in the state of Illinois. And to have Democratic candidates on stage all talking, I mean, even trying to force the front runner to disavow the Speaker of the House, that's something.
It's something. So, you know, you can think Governor Bruce Rauner has accomplished, it seems, that goal in tarnishing Madigan, but he has brought himself down with Madigan. So they're both sort of in a sinking ship together.
Amanda Vinicky and Tina Svondelis, there's a lot more to talk about. We'll continue with winners and losers coming up here on The Reload. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you'd like to chime in. Give us your thoughts on winners, losers, overreported, underreported. We'll do all that coming up, as well as tonight's news with Rob Martier. It's The Download. Stay with us. All right, reloading this week's news. 224 says that a union case is going to ruin workers and hurt us as teachers. We're not going to get, if they don't want to do it, they don't get the benefits. That was from earlier. Let's keep going. 847 says winner this week, Libby Schaff, the mayor of Oakland, for telling ICE or telling people that an ICE raid was coming. I'm sure that is controversial, whether that's winners or losers. And 630 says Chuck Schumer. I'm not sure. Just overall. I think that's just an overall general loser category.
There you go.
There you go. All right. Before we move on to losers, we had so many great stuff, great selections, nominations for the winners category. Well, Tina, what do you got for winners? We'll just kind of go bit by bit here.
Sure. I have Uber for having the driver who drove the drunk guy in West Virginia to New Jersey for $1,635 in an Uber XL, which he accidentally ordered the XL and could have gone for $800.
Either way, better than driving drunk. So yes. Bravo, yeah. I will say, not only to the Uber driver, but to the Uber passenger.
Yeah.
I'm
$1,600.
Good choice.
Better than what it could cost in court costs and guilt.
You're right.
Also, there were three Chinese professionals that called an Uber from Dallas to Nashville. That was another record-setting one this summer when their flight was canceled, and that was about 11 hours. So people do this. But this guy was more entertaining because he was drunk and didn't remember that he ordered Uber XL.
I will say, wait, to put Uber, sadly, in the loser category, even as we're doing winners, I just saw a report that evidently the average profit that an Uber driver makes is something like $3.37 after you take into account gas and wear and tear on their car. And so
this was a study that came out on the East Coast. Who was it? It was interesting. It was a whole study about from a university that said that
you see a paycheck come through, you think, oh, great, I'm making this as profit. But no, you've got to put that money back in.
Right.
But $1,600, I'm guessing he would have skewed the average.
You have to have a good credit score and have a good credit card. Like, does everyone have an extra $1,600 in their credit card?
I just had it. Yeah, exactly. And I just had a furnace bust up. And that, I mean, the amount of money I was moving around from place to place to pay for that, I thought for sure, like, the SEC or somebody's going, what's Kaufman doing?
I need to get this from savings to checking back to, can we get it from credit to here?
Like, there's so much going on just to cover that. So, I agree with you. Yeah. All right, what else you got for winners category?
I got Prince Harry and Meghan Markle inviting 2,600 of the public to their wedding, which I love because I've been watching The Crown on Netflix. So you see, like, the beginnings of them trying to introduce the public into Buckingham Palace, and it's a whole evolution. So this is like the most extreme version of here that they want the public, and they're choosing different professions and they're inviting different schools. So it's a very public event, very different than what
my favorite follow-up question, it might have been on NPR, I was listening to somewhere on the radio this week, where the next question after the press conference they had was like, what was the body language like between Meghan Markle and
Prince Harry?
Not Harry. What's the woman who's married to the other guy?
You mean Kate Middleton?
Yeah, Middleton.
The Duchess?
Oh, so, yeah, sorry. I'm not my
cup of
tea.
Because they had a joint press
area.
Conference.
Yeah, and so they're like, what was the body? What were they like? And they're like, well, the body language was formal, but they could tell that they didn't really know each other, but they like each other and they respect each other. That was the answer. I'm like, what is this?
It's like
I'm
a little. Us
can I have a confession
with,
right here?
Lightning results in between them.
Yes, you're right. Can I have a confession?
Yes.
So I may or may not, but let's be clear, I definitely did.
You're going?
I would be shouting that from the rooftops. Yes, sure. But no, I may have spent a weeknight recently watching one of the Hallmark movies starring Meghan Markle. It's called The Dater's Handbook, and that's it awesome. Is not the worst movie I've ever seen. But I'm slightly a little upset. I mean, it's just, it is crazy. That's an awesome. American girl who went to Northwestern,
I know nothing. I have avoided that story. I don't know why. I have a block when it comes to royal
family.
I think
it's well, I mean, good it's for you. Good I applaud news. That. And yet I can't help it on the other end.
Do you know that the British press calls them the Fab Four?
Do they really?
Do they deserve that title?
No.
I'm not sure about that.
The Fab Four.
All right. And then you also have Alderman Pawar launching the progressive news site. That's interesting. Yeah.
It is very interesting. So when he decided not to run for governor last year, he was talking about starting a super PAC named One Illinois. And then he actually told me that once DNA Info folded, he decided that he wanted to go on that route instead and start a news organization. And he specifically calls out some of the far-right groups or organizations, the Illinois Policy Institute and Breitbart. So he's trying to combat the negative narrative that he says is going throughout the state of people, and that there's positive things to say, and that they're going to be just showing the highlighting the people and the good things, the tourism aspects, the uniting people instead of dividing them, which was a crucial theme to his gubernatorial campaign. And if you talk to him, he talks about this all the time. It's like really part
of
it.
And let's be clear. I mean, the rise of the partisan press that isn't labeled as such, because to me that is a different thing, but the real, quote, fake news that isn't even trying to be moderate or in certain ways honest about the situation has fundamentally changed again. To getting back to how we started the program with Janice, I mean, that is a fundamental change in politics, our discourse, and our democracy, as is social media's role in that and all of it. And you cannot, I think, ignore it. It's so easy to push it aside, but that is going to have long-term ramifications.
And he is really young. He's 37. He said he's not going to run for alderman again, so we're always waiting to hear what's next. He already tried a gubernatorial run, so we'll see how this goes. It's hard to do, obviously. obviously we know that any news organization, it's hard to raise the money, it's hard to keep it going, so we'll see if this works for him.
Possible opening door for Gene Shelter to come back in the 47th Ward.
Perfect.
Anyway. All right, going on to losers now.
Can I do a quick winner? Yeah. I'm sorry. No. I have two quick ones. One is Indiana. They now finally have Sunday liquor sales. So
you don't have to go to Michigan. You know the losers, Michigan.
Yeah, that is true. Every winner has a loser, and there we go. And then also, for me, I'm really excited. Chicago Party Ant followed me on Twitter.
Me too.
Yay! That was a highlight of the week. So yay, we love you, Chicago Party Ant.
Too many people. So I know,
it was an honor. I think she went on a journalist kick because of a couple of others. But hey, I'll take it. She rocks. I love you, Chicago Party Ant.
There you go, Chicago Party Ant. That's awesome. All right, the losers I have are political ads. And I know that, obviously, no duh statement of the year, but the misleading facts and the way that that a lot of these candidates are putting together attack ads this season, this primary season, seems to over the top. Appalled's not the right word. I don't really care, but it's
should care.
I feel like there's like it started with the wiretap stuff that we saw with Pritzker by doing a 14-minute commercial about that, and there was really much ado about nothing. But then and the African American stuff is much more damaging, I thought, than
the least offensive.
The stuff with, I think it's a Rauner commercial against Jeannie Ives where he, and I think we air it here, but it's this idea that she's in Madigan's pocket and they used a clip of her saying the word Mike Madigan at the editorial board.
Yeah, I think they were saying, would you roll back the tax hike immediately? And she's saying, well, I think, and then it kind of cuts her off into not explaining her explanation, which she wants to ultimately do it, but...
Yeah, I think every educated voter knows that the conservative Republican that is running in the primary against Bruce Rauner is not in line with Mike Madigan. Everybody knows that. But it's just
But you shouldn't make that assumption. Right. Again, it all gets back to money and politics and how that we cannot escape it because there are a lot of people, I think, that don't know that. I'm not advocating for or against Rauner, Ives, anything in that primary, of course, but that is a fundamental lie.
When you hear the storyline over and over and over that there's so much money and the money's going to be put into ads and the ads that we get are just blatant misleading. Well,
they're using all
annoying.
Those editorial board meetings. I remember the Sun-Times, I don't believe that we had our streaming, but I had 75 campaigns asking me for them because they're just drooling, wanting to listen to every tidbit to use them for these different ads. So that's what they did with that Tribune editorial board.
Yeah, I don't like it. I'd much rather go back to the old school infrared, this guy. Like, that, you know, like that's a better one than making stuff up. I mean, really, truly making stuff up. And at a certain point, I'm just flustered as an educated voter, as somebody who's maybe because I sit in this chair and I got to read the news and that kind of stuff, that none of this stuff is accurate. And on all of them are doing it. And it seems worse than
some ever. More than others. But yeah, I mean, and that is where it is incumbent on people to educate themselves. But it gets really difficult. Mm-hmm.
The other loser in your category, Tina, Mike Madigan, a strange. I don't even know what to say. Was it a press conference where he came out about investigating sexual harassment claims, saying this is what he's done in the last. He's trying to douse the flames of what's happening, but it just asked more lawmakers had questions, and it seemed to somewhat backfire in the way that he thought maybe this might end the controversy, but it continued.
Right. He listed 9 staff complaints, and we've seen the list. It was distributed to members during a caucus, but a lot of them we noticed that the subject verb part was a little bit strange because it had a lot of detail about the actual victim as opposed to who they were accusing. So there's more details about a woman who does this and this said this happened to her by someone. So we didn't. The wording is a little bit off. We're not sure of the timing of it. He had gone silent for about a week after everything. He probably was just, you know, thinking we need this to simmer down a little bit after the Elena Hampton accusations came out. So it's very strange. If you look at pictures of this press conference too, he He's letting his attorney speak for him most of the time. We're not sure of the motivations. We're not sure if they're true. We're not sure what he's doing at this point. But
it seems like he's trying to get out in front on an issue. But when you have more questions raised than answered, it doesn't necessarily have that effect. And then there's also, disclosure questions in terms of if these truly were accusations that were made and with the expectation of privacy, and then there were no identities revealed. But again,
people
questions.
Would know if you know something that's happened to you, you reported it, you know which case is yours.
It's an issue that I don't think is going away.
And then I also think that, is it possible when you say he's trying to get out in front of it, is that he's trying to take away the power of the gotcha moment where someone's going to come out and have a press conference and say, I put my name, I ran.
Sure.
You know, well, so he's trying to get ahead of that,
right? Things. We know, we've heard names, we've heard other complaints that might be coming forward. So this might be his attempt to say, we know that this exists and here they are. It's very vague, but at least he's saying them.
I mean, to me, there's a broader loser. If you look at this week, there's still is certainly power in Cook County Democratic politics. All of those at the top who have one another's backs at the ballot box in campaign contributions and such. But it certainly has been a several weeks of Michael Madigan, the figure in Illinois politics, taking a hit. With him this week, of course, you had Cook County Court Clerk Dorothy Brown, a story about continued FBI investigation into her office. And basically, it looks like pay-to-play scandal where for a $10,000 donation, you get a job or a promotion or something. So there's that. She is. There's also, of course, Assessor Joe Berrios, who is running for re-election. We'll see if voters once again elect him, despite the fact that this is something that I don't think you would have very many politicians have the gall to do this week in court fighting his primary opponent, Fritz Kagi. Is saying that it is wrong that Berrios takes campaign contributions from property tax attorneys who make money off of an appeals process that has been shown by several studies now to be fundamentally flawed and discriminatory. And then Berrios is in court. Berrios is in court. This is the galling part. Fighting because there is an ethics law that says you are limited as to what sort of donations you can accept from entities that are seeking official business. So property tax appeals lawyers to the assessor, and he's in court trying to argue that to free those limits. And that is just, you're heading into a primary that's supposed to be close, and I cannot fathom another politician being like, you know what,
which I found, I wasn't as appalled as the ad I saw that he had against his opponent was all about the NRA and gun control.
Which has nothing to do with the assessor's office.
Yeah, and I was
literally
it
nothing.
Doesn't even matter at this point. They're just
in the Kagi campaign says that that's also, they have a whole list of reasons to point out why that is, again, false. Literally a lie.
I had the same thing. I'm like, this is for Cook County
assessor. It's really brazen. Mm-hmm.
Amanda Vinicky, Tina Svondelis in studio tonight. Reloading the news. We'll come back. We will do our quick list of more losers. Losers are always the most fun. And then we'll get to overreported, underreported, and find out which stories going to be remembered from this week. It's The Download. Stay with us. It's about time to get that picture out with the orange cone in the pothole. It's my favorite. It'll show up in everybody's feed tomorrow. It's a recyclable. Amanda Vinicky, Tina Svondelis, both in studio tonight. Reload the news. We got a couple more losers, our favorite category, right? So let's get to losers. Tina, what do you got for losers?
I have the northern white rhino, which is 45 years old. It's a male rhino in Kenya, and it's the last male of the entire species, which is very depressing. And he's very sick. He has an infection on his back, and there are two women nearby. He cannot reproduce with them at this moment, and he might be euthanized soon. So it might be the last white rhino out there. It's super bummery.
Wow, that's
sorry
deep.
To bring it down.
No, wow, that's loser for all of us.
Yeah. It's a loser.
No, it really
world.
Is.
It's a loser for the world. I'm not.
We're all
not
suffering. We're all kind of responsible. I'm sorry to be
I'm
the
in
a little
of the rhino.
Yeah.
A loser rhino. You last one.
We're the losers.
We're the losers.
Yeah.
That article, as you mentioned in the break, that there's 24-hour armed guard surveillance on the rhino for poachers.
Which is super depressing
that
as well.
That is depressing,
someone
too.
Might,
yeah.
The poachers might be after this very sick rhino, the last of its species.
Like, they have no recognition that like, they just, whatever, they, we got to get this last one. This is it.
Yeah.
What else you got?
Other losers. There's a nor'easter situation going on, as we just heard, and people were flying today and barfing on planes. Apparently,
I know. I saw that.
According to the National Weather Service, it's not just like word of mouth Twitter, but there's a pilot's report in the National Weather Service, and it says pretty much everyone on the plane threw up. And then it said even the pilots were on the verge of throwing up. So if there's all
of the
these
bumpy,
videos,
right, coming in for the from the storm.
The actual landings, if you see, I was just gasping watching it because I'm terrified of landings. And it was this, the planes are just wiggling completely, and it's really rough.
Oh, because the wind and everything.
Ugh. So if you flew on the east from the East Coast or to the East Coast today, I'm sorry.
You are a loser.
You are a loser, and I apologize.
Or a winner because you made it.
Right.
Here you go.
Yeah.
What do you got for losers?
Thanks for that. Who did I have for losers? I had Governor Rauner because he just cannot get out from that Legionnaires story. Also, gun bills, as we talked about, put him in a difficult position politically. And the poll that showed him is worse liked by Illinois voters than Trump here in a very blue state. Also, Cook County Democratic Party, as we talked about. My car from all of those darn potholes has been a loser this week. And then also the Kushners, as in Jared and Ivanka Trump. Ouch.
The stories tonight about Jared Kushner are very strange. And it came out of, do I say this right, Qatar? Is that right? When Qatar? Mm-hmm. Qatar? That country had said that Kushner was other Persian Gulf countries. There was a deal where he was essentially saying, if you are with us, then we will punish Qatar. And they came forward and told everybody, or told the FBI or whatever, whoever you tell in those situations. But you're like, he's over there on all those trips and he's setting up deals and at the same time speaking for the U.S. And well, who is this guy?
Right. I mean, I think it raises questions about Trump's leadership in terms of having somebody with a total lack of foreign policy experience in that position, either the appearance of conflict of interest or actually dealing on his own company's for his own company's financial benefit on our nation's diamond reputation.
What they say that they were salivating that they could blackmail this dude.
Right.
Like, that's never good when they're like, oh, you're the representative.
Including the
AT&T America?
Building here, you know, getting a mortgage and a new loan for that building. I mean, it's just been a terrible week for both of them. And the Trump administration in general, losing some of his key figures.
The list of the people who have left and resigned and moved on.
It's so fun. I want to see a movie with all of them.
It's getting very yearbook-like. Like, when they put it together and the pictures across, you're like, wow, where are they now?
Well, we always knew that Jared Kushner would be under the spotlight. I mean, he's under the magnifying glass because of who he is, and we knew something would go down. I was reading something about how he's not getting the daily brief anymore, and he was one of only a dozen or so.
Losing security clearance.
He's losing things left and right. He's not in the know anymore.
Yeah. There you go. That's a long list of losers. When we come back, we'll do overreported, underreported. We'll do the rabbit hole story. Trade wars! And we'll come back and talk about stories that will be remembered from this week. We'll reload the news with Tina Svondelis and Amanda Vinicky, so stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's Download 720 and WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, Tamara Lindemann, The Weather Station, Canadian folk singer who's going to be at Metro coming up here in a couple weeks. Actually, next week. She'll be on the program, and then we'll play Never Have I Ever coming up in the 10 o'clock hour as well. 312-981-7200. 269 gets us started, underreported. Ben Carson's $31,000 furniture for the dining room in his office. A dining room? Some people in Puerto Rico still don't have rooms. Shame on HUD. That's amazing. I always get my sensors go off, Amanda Vinicky and Tina Svondelis, because I'm always like, is this the first time we're paying attention to this kind of stuff? Because of the Trump administration, and they're a little bit more brash about it. But or is it something that they're the only ones that are doing?
You know, I think there have been stories from time to time in terms of the costs of various refurbishing, what have you. And sometimes I think they're very valid stories when there is a backlash. Other times there's often an anger that rises when, for example, we had a governor's mansion in Springfield that is now being refurbished by partially through the Rauner's donations and also through private fundraising, that, you know, if you don't keep things up, they're going to totally fall into disrepair, and that costs more money in the long run. This, to me, is, of course, a different story. Yeah. And I did hear an interesting interview on NPR that kind of said, you know, for all of the backlash and that being a very tone-deaf purchase by the Carsons, it brought attention to something that often is ignored, and that is maybe the lack of affordable housing. So hopefully bringing some attention, this advocate thought to that issue. Mm-hmm.
All right, overreported. We all were just kind of had on the list the Alec Baldwin, Donald Trump tweet today. Okay. Like, I'm just so sick of all of it.
It's just that narrative that President Trump is very sensitive and watches his TV all day and sees this impression. It's just, I think it's the people who dislike him that are just wanting to be like, oh my God, he's so offended by this comedian who's so angry.
But why do it? I guess, and I understand it because I think I heard Steve Cochran this morning kind of making a joke about, you know, you've got Vladimir Putin saying that he has nuclear weapons that could hit Florida. You use this as a communication tool. You have nothing to say about that, but then out of nowhere, which, you know, I'm not even sure some
prompted. That, to me, is the story, and that is not how it has been reported. Yeah. To look at the president's tweets, and I think oftentimes it is a fault to say that the president tweeted. No, he issued a policy statement via a particular platform.
Right.
And that is where we do need to pay attention. He is the president of the United States, and that is an insight into where he is thinking and what he is thinking when it is policy issues. So, say the story shouldn't have any, Alec Baldwin should never be mentioned unless it is the president has had no comment in terms of the lack of the nation's defense systems. If you believe what Vladimir Putin is saying, he did, however, have a tweet about a comedian who impersonates him on Saturday Night Live. And leave it at that. That's how to do that story.
He's gone after so many celebrities and so many entertainment related things.
And why are we covering
this? Is very obvious.
Yeah, it's silly.
Because it's never happened before.
You guys ready for this idea? I've been floating this for years. Twitter should be off the record. Discuss.
Terrible idea.
Best idea ever. Because then you can do everything you can, and then you have to go to the source to be like, I need what you said on Twitter. Can I?
Well, yeah, we definitely like, it literally use tweets can't. For stories, and we will check to see if it sounds insane. Yeah.
If it's verified.
Yeah.
But that's, when it's the president's verified account, and that's the medium that he uses, he hasn't had a press conference.
I call it
He hasn't answered questions from reporters. So if that's your only window.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, then
that's
you would have Trump on Twitter saying things, and then us asking the administration and them denying that he said that.
Yeah, so I'm sorry. I don't think that works.
I think that it would work. I call it the Ozzie Guillen clause. When Ozzie Guillen was on Twitter at the beginning, he'd say the weirdest things, and then they'd ask him about it and be like,
what are you talking about?
You're like, you said it. He's like, no, I said I was just joking around here. And you're like, oh, yeah, I don't think he gets
he
it. He's on the record.
Real.
Yeah. And so I feel like that would have helped. Anyway, when I get my funding together, the new social media thing will be called Off the Record. It's just going to be called Off the Record.
Looking forward to it.
All right.
Let's see how that goes.
I'll hit you guys up
for
investments. All right. The other issue, the Oscars, of course, this time of year, this is the place to be. I haven't heard, it's funny because I haven't heard much about it. I've heard a lot of people kind of hate on Shape of Water, which
I didn't watch it.
But I got to say, you know, this year, and maybe it's because of the scandals in Hollywood, but there hasn't been as much art and debate over the movies and who's going to win and who's not and things like
that. I've heard it, and I am a fan, and I see lots of Oscar movies. I've been hearing a lot about what Jimmy Kimmel is going to be doing in terms of his discourse. Like, is he going to talk about the Me Too? And he has said that he will. So I think that we will see a lot of politics into that. In terms of the movies, that Get Out movie, I think, is
being
talked about a lot, which I hate scary movies, but I loved the message that it sent about just
Get Out was so good. It was so different.
It was so uncomfortable.
I've heard two stories on that, and this might be even getting into the rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. One was a strange race baiting story that was like, well, older Oscar viewers are already saying no to Get Out, even though they didn't watch the movie.
That's what I want to see. I want to see if they're going to get anything.
And the other one was, our younger voters might actually catapult Get Out into winning the Oscar because that's all they're voting for.
Right. Well, I mean, there's a scene in there where they're driving to this home and they're stopped by a white police officer, and it just, you feel really uncomfortable immediately because you understand that this white police officer is not going to be nice to this African-American driver. Or he was a passenger at the time and asked for his license. So it starts out with that, and there are ridiculous parts of the movie. This is not a realistic situation. Hopefully that does not happen ever. But it did get people talking about it.
Yeah. I thought it was a really different.
Let's shift to underreported stories. Underreported stories are I guess you have, Tina, Ed Burke and emotional support animals on planes. He's Alderman Burke always finds a way to be a couple weeks late to the dance.
Right. So
but he's using
Delta,
his platform.
Delta United already did this. So we were discussing what does he have in this. But he's saying that people are bringing very strange animals on flights, which is true. And a lot of airlines are not allowing them to without showing proof that they're actually a service animal, which is also super depressing because if yeah. people are like, here's my parrot,
why
and
is
I
he
need
doing?
This parrot
why does he,
to fly.
Why does he have to have a
There's
voice
There's always
in
a reason underneath
There's always
there.
A reason.
But he's saying that people are bringing turkeys, gliding possums, snakes, and spiders.
And the peacock.
So I would really be interested
Remember
to
the
see
peacock?
Someone bringing a spider onto a plane and to see how that goes down.
My emotional spider.
I guess I'd rather have a spider than some of these other things that
yeah, could peck at you.
That, you know, bite and defecate in the aisle and can well, really I be. Also, I mean, presuming the spider stays in its
yeah,
cage.
What is a gliding possum? Is the question.
A gliding possum.
I don't know. A sugar glider?
I don't know.
You know those things?
Yeah.
Those are.
I'm not sure.
A gliding possum?
That's what he said. I'm going to Google it immediately.
The image that comes to my head is like a possum on a skateboard. But maybe that's
there we
not,
go.
That could be it. Yeah. Okay, so
the Arctic temps are another underreported one, right?
And then the Arctic temperatures, which you had for biggest
I have
story,
that in several categories.
That is a huge story that was completely underreported this week, which scientists are baffled and scared.
Yes.
That's what caught my attention. That the Arctic temperatures are way above normal and they're not changing.
Right. It's supposed to be the coldest time right now, and I think they recorded them at 35 degrees, and the sun won't rise there until March 20th, so that's a couple weeks away. But they said that it's been rare, but now it's becoming more routine, and then it's related to the decline of winter sea ice in the Arctic, and also you're seeing it in Europe because there's heavy snow in a lot of different countries, and I believe in Poland and I think in England, but it's early for them to be getting it. So you're seeing a shift, like you're seeing the melting in the Arctic and you're seeing snow.
Anytime I read a climate change story like that, it is absolutely frightening.
Yeah, and nothing ever happens.
And I think it's because, in a sense, I mean, this is a story that is underreported right now, but it's been reported for years now. And that's part of it because you're not seeing, it's not one single event. It's not, you know, a mass shooting that causes a national outrage. It's constant, and it's because you see so much in politics. We notice it all the time that there is no action until there's a crisis. And so
When is the crisis?
I mean, it's okay. It's not affecting us in our daily lives. And so it just continues because what you need to do to change it is going to be painful and take work.
Yeah,
like,
well, you know.
Planes or something. But they said that the stratosphere, which is like where the weather occurs above, I'm sorry, it's above the weather, that's been warming too, which is extra scary. So there's a lot of
All
things
right,
going on.
There we
on.
Go. That's the extra scary category.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Amanda Vinicky, Tina Svondelis in studio tonight. We are reloading the news. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to get in. We'll take a quick break, our last one. We'll come back. We'll talk about the rabbit hole stories and which stories can be remembered this week in 5, 10, 15, 100, 500 years from now. Stay with us. All right, we're reloading this week's news. We've still got the stories that took us down the rabbit holes, which story is going to be remembered. Tina Svondelis from the Sun-Times and Amanda Vinicky from WTTW are here in studio. Thanks for being here, you guys. 312-981-7200. Bobby D. says, I thought Alex Baldwin was supposed to move to Canada.
Did it say Alex? Or did it say
Alex. Yeah,
that's a good joke. That's funny.
773 says, how is Trump so stupid about tariffs and trade wars? A stable genius or the exact opposite or both? Explain. That's a good question.
Very good question.
See it going both ways. The story's coming out, and we could talk about, we'll talk about the tariffs at some other point, but the story coming out tonight that he did it in a fit of rage because NBC was reporting that inside sources say he's been so, I forget the word they used, unhinged, something stupid word like that. That's like, that they just said that he was so mad that he did this a little bit on his own unilaterally. There was no actual White House.
Well, yeah, supposedly he made the announcement before there was even an official order, press release, like anything to do.
That's, I think, where it comes from because you don't have anyone who's out there being surrogates defending it. Because you didn't get them in the loop, so now nobody is except the critics.
And a lot of the White House officials are against it.
Right.
Because they believe that it is going to be very detrimental to the economy and at least stock prices. And
And I have a whole thing on tariffs because with the solar energy thing, we did this and took down the rabbit hole to go into what that means. And there's some good that comes out of it because this was something he ran on. And if we pay attention to the consistencies of this president, he has been very good at trying to at least take on the issues that he talked about on the campaign trail. This was one of them, unfair trade deficits. Yeah. So whether or not it's the right thing for the country, he's attacking. So.
You know, I read one of the interesting, there are so many ways to dissect this, but one of the interesting takes that I had read was how this shows his fixation because of really his age in the old world economy, where at this point in time, we are a service-based economy nationally, technology, and their critics would say that you're going to lose more manufacturing jobs than you will have helped in terms of steel jobs. Obviously, steel companies, some of which are in Illinois, celebrating this, but then you have auto manufacturers, you know, people saying, what, another interesting take that it's going to raise the cost of, you know, beer and LaCroix if that hits at the heart of many of my friends.
And I don't know how to, for poor Tony Preckwinkle, if Trump gets this through and the LaCroix goes up and we go, it's good. And she'll be like, no.
She would be really mad.
Tina, what do you got for a story that took you down the rabbit hole?
It's Barbara Streisand cloning her dog, Samantha.
So crazy, isn't it?
She has two dogs. Her dog passed away last year, and she said she wanted to keep a little bit with her in some way. And so they're named Miss Scarlet and Miss Violet. They were cloned by taking cells from her mouth and stomach as she was dying, I believe. And she dressed them up in different colors to tell them apart, Scarlet and Violet, during their births because they are identical. And so she said that she had a friend who had a clone, and she was very impressed with that dog, and she wanted to do the same thing.
Things that you can do when you have a ton of money.
That's the scary part about the world right now. If you do, if you fall into that 1%, you can defy science, logic, and everything in between if you have money. Sure, I'll clone my dog. I'll take this technology that we haven't really figured out yet, and but I'll clone my dog.
Yeah.
I miss my dog.
Yeah.
She says you can't clone the soul, though. Yeah. She wants to specify.
Profound,
that.
Bob.
Did she sing it? You can't clone the soul. Everyone clap. Thank you. Thank you. All right, what do you got, Amanda, for a story that took you down the rabbit hole?
Story took me down the rabbit hole. I had a couple. And so one was, I would just recommend, because I don't think we have time to get into it, everybody read a Chicago Tribune story about what is happening with some of the state's most disabled residents. And there's this continued fight over whether they are best served in small group homes in neighborhoods or in state-run facilities, in particular the Murray Center, where Rauner has actually been sort of an unexpected ally for people that advocate for that. And it's just there's no easy solutions. And so read that Tribune article. The more one that may resonate with perhaps additional listeners is if you take a selfie, and not with a stick, but, you know, just a regular old selfie, and you're like, ugh, I hate my face. Evidently, a lot of people have that thought. I know I often do, hence I don't take many, or at least share them. But that is leading to an uptick in plastic surgeries, particularly nose jobs. And so there's this belief that there's this medical, but people are actually, you know, misperceiving how they look because usually you're not right there. People see you from like 5 feet away, and you are just fine and beautiful, and embrace who you are.
Wow, that was a striking sentiment right at the end there. All right, which story is going to take us down the which story is going to be remembered this week, you guys? This is the final category. So which story from this week is going to be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 50, 75?
This is not really like a news event or anything, but the New York Times today posted something about how to buy a gun in 15 countries. So I'd be interested to see what will change in 5, 10, 15 years. So it lists in the U.S., pass an instant background check, buy a gun. 1, 2, and then it lists 15 other countries. So say like in Russia, you have to get a license, you have to pass a test, get a doctor's note that say you don't have mental illness, go to a class, apply for a license, pass a background check, and 7, buy a gun. So I think it'll be interesting to see if all the things that we're seeing this week and we saw a recent statistic that showed all of the school shootings from this year, that it's 12 in 2018. So we'll see if this changes.
Amanda, what do you get? What do you think is going to be the
story? I mean, I think really it's what we've been talking about. If Trump does stick by these tariffs, what it does to change the American economy, if we see any consequences of that, depending on how this U.S. Supreme Court case with unions pans out, whether that will have major ramifications for the labor force and for political contributions. And then, of course, the climate. Like, will we all be swimming after the ice caps melt? And I don't know. I mean, to end it on a downer there, but that's kind of one of those you're not.
No, I like
it.
I have the same thing. I think that the tariffs and how much blue jeans are going to cost at the Kohl's.
Wait, what's that one?
The tariffs, the trade wars, like how it's all going to affect the idea that we had this this Trump tax plan that was going to give us more money in our paycheck, and how that possibly could be negated by the fact that everything costs more now because of a trade war. I hope that doesn't happen, but I think that's what's going to be remembered in 10, 15, 20 years, 55. They're going to be in the, when we go back to caves in 2,000 years, that's what the glyphics on the walls will be.
Great.
Yeah, that's how news is going to be. It's going to go back. Everything that's old comes
on
around.
On the off-the-record Twitter.
True. On off-the-record Twitter. That's right. Tina Spondelis, political reporter at the Chicago Sun-Times. I'll see you on Sunday at Cards Against Humanity for the Attorney General debate.
That was my buzzer.
That's your buzzer. Yeah. And Amanda Vinicky from WTTW. You guys, thanks so much for reloading the news this week. I appreciate it.
It was a blast. Thank you.
Awesome. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, coming up on March 10th, Metro will be the place to be, and the weather station, the band, on stage.
Kept it all to myself. Kept it all to myself. Kept it all to myself. There were days when the luminous all the skies and the progressing. Struggling so hard, and you're leaving. Can hardly take it. Life feeling out. Rode up past St. Clair, same old city, but it could have been anywhere. In the center of the air, so exotic. Every thought like I'm never a thought it would. And I felt that confidence in me, like a child in a strange new body. I kept it all to myself. I kept it all to myself. I kept it all to myself. Sometimes I left you in that altered beauty, untouched by doubt about my memory. Sometimes I loved you in a shadow way, windscreen clearing but still streaked with gray. Sometimes we held hands like we were children, and I've never known anything different. Like I've never known anything different. Like I've never known. I tried to leave you, I left only myself. Before I knew I was down in the like I was floating up on the ceiling as we were just talking, and calm faces would change on me. Eyes and nose and mouth, unfamiliar assembly. I kept it all to myself. I kept it all to myself. I kept it all to myself.
The Weather Station is the project of Canadian folk singer Tamara Lindemann. Her self-titled album, The Weather Station, was put out last fall. It was a huge success, making a ton of the end-of-the-year lists. And she's up for a Juno Award for Contemporary Roots Album of the Year. The band is on a whirlwind North American tour that brings them to Metro on March 10th. Tamara Lindemann, my guest tonight. Tamara, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You get through Chicago. I saw that you were just at Hideout not too long ago. Talk about your experience playing here in Chicago, what it means to have a stop on the tour here in the Midwest.
Oh, it was so nice. We sold out the Hideout. It was the best crowd. It was kind of our favorite show of that tour. Just such a great feeling, and it's such a great little venue. So yeah, nothing but good feelings about Chicago.
No, the Hideout, and we love the Hideout here at Download, a more intimate space. It's a great space, mm-hmm. and very close to the action. So a lot of your music, especially some of your earlier stuff, is going to play great in that space. But at the Metro, we're talking at triples in size. It gets to a place that's the home of bands like Smashing Pumpkins. When you go on tour and you have to play spaces like Metro, how do you adjust your set to deal with the size and the space of the stage and the music and the intimacy that you usually produce?
Yeah, it's really interesting, especially too because you're opening. So the set we've been playing on those bigger stages with Bahamas has been very short and scrappy. You know, it's kind of fun because on the one hand, you lose that intimacy and closeness of people standing right in front of you and being able to see your facial expressions. But on the other hand, you have this bigger room to fill, you know, with sound, and you kind of have like this bigger canvas to make bigger strokes on, in a way. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a fun challenge for us, and we've been really enjoying it.
Obviously, the music that's on the weather station is more, I would say, more adaptable in that way, because with the music is much more rock and roll than the earlier stuff. But are you pretty much going for the rock and roll stuff, or do you have breaks in the set where you go back into a more acoustic vibe?
Yeah, we've been kind of doing like mostly the rock and roll stuff, and then like a really quiet song in the middle just to mess with things. But yeah, it's definitely way easier than it was with my previous record, Loyalty. It was all about the subtlety and the intensity and this sort of emotional connection with the audience, which was really awesome when it worked. But when it wasn't our crowd, it could be very difficult to come through properly. So it's been so much more fun playing this music on bigger stages because it just works there. Yeah.
Talk about that evolution, because when I hear the weather station, I do hear the intimacy and the emotional connection. Obviously, it's a very personal record. But you mentioned Loyalty, and you mentioned some of the earlier stuff that you do. How have you evolved as a musician? But also, how has your intimacy evolved when it comes to writing and recording and producing and performing this music?
Yeah, it's interesting because to me, it's still intimacy. It's just a different type of intimacy. It's like a different thing that's being expressed in the conversation, you know, like the energy that I get from being on stage and playing these songs is so different from the energy of Loyalty. But to me, it's no less of a personal conversation between me and the listener, you know? Mm-hmm. And there can be times where, you know, I'm singing all those words and all those sentiments are flying by so quickly. And it's a really unique feeling that I've never felt before on stage. I don't really know how to describe it, but it's pretty cool.
When I think about the music, too, emotion plays a big role. It is an emotional album, the Weather Station, the self-titled album that's just out. And a lot of the music, you go into the songs and it might be very personal to you. It may be a moment in time when it comes to where you were in a certain point in your life. Do you find yourself channeling that when you start performing those songs? Or is these just now songs that take on a life of their own?
It's interesting. You do find yourself channeling it, especially with some songs. Like some songs have a really strong pull like that. Mm-hmm. You know, some songs kind of adapt to the situation, but some songs just take you right back to that exact feeling. Like that song I have, Complicit, or that song 30, like, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting. When I sing those songs, I feel, yeah, kind of something comes over me that is to do with those words and that music. And, you know, to me, that's always the mark of a strong song, when it has this life of its own and it pulls you along when you sing it.
I love it, because when I hear the music, it is sentimental and it is emotional. And I wonder, when you talk about actually harkening back or channeling back to that moment, it's not necessarily positive or optimistic. So you almost have to go into the emotion. Is that difficult for you as a person, not just a musician, but a person, to have to go into the emotion of the song each time you play it?
No, I think like sometimes shows can be very draining, you know, but sometimes there's like a catharsis in that. And also the way that these songs are, what they express makes me feel so kind of like powerful and like relieved. You know, it's like how when if you have like an emotional conversation with someone and you tell them things that you've been meaning to tell them for a long time and you finally get it all out, you know, it's a positive feeling, even if the things that you expressed were negative, you know?
Right.
So that to me is the feeling that I associate with this record. It's empowerment, even when I'm expressing negative things.
Yeah. Singer-songwriter Tamara Lindemann talking to us about her album, The Weather Station, her band, The Weather Station. They're going to be at Metro on March 10th. Open up for Bahamas. You know, a lot of your music, and the music is, like I said earlier, is up for a Juno Award for Contemporary Roots Album of the Year. It is tremendously unique because it's almost short story. It goes beyond, 30's a great example of where it's not the phrasing that you expect from a song. It's not chorus, bridge, all the ways that you construct a modern song. There's something great about mm-hmm. the idea that the phrasing and everything about it is just, you're telling this story. It does draw comparisons, and you get a lot of comparisons to another Canadian folk singer, Joni Mitchell, who did similar things like that. But when you, as a musician, because you're a singer-songwriter, you're a musician, you produce your own stuff, talk about the dichotomy between pushing yourself as a singer-songwriter to create short stories as opposed to songs, and how that gets reconciled with the musician in you who is taught to chord structures and everything that goes into putting a song together. How do you put those two things together to make this great music?
Oh, it's really fun and interesting to do that. I think, like, you know, with a song like that, I had that line of, like, that was the year I was 30, and I was like, okay, that's the chorus. That's great. And I was writing it and trying to repeat that through the song as though it was a chorus normally. And it was interesting because the moment I did that, it just took all the power away from it, you know? So, and I wound up writing these longer and longer verses that bled into each other. And then there's these really subtle, like, little chord changes underneath that aren't really chord changes that seem to, like, up the tension and, you know, the little subtle changes in melody. And so it just sort of, you know, I feel like the song kind of led me. I think I'm always pulled between wanting to make something really approachable and, you know, because I actually really love pop music and melody, you know, like I love classic American songwriting and I really aspire to create melodies as memorable as those songs. But, you know, there's also this little like imp in me, I guess, that always wants to push against everything. You know, if I hear something, I'm like, I want to do something that's not that, you know? So yeah. I think that push-pull is what makes it fun and what makes it interesting, what I do. And yeah, this record had a really strong energy of its own that definitely pushed me past any expectations I might have had.
Well, I mentioned, you know, you're up for a Juno Award, and I guess I'm American audiences, and I think of Toronto and or Canadian music, and a lot of times it boils down to top 40 or hip-hop, and you think of Drake and Justin Bieber and maybe the Arcade Fire, of course, a Montreal band as well, but talk to us about, as a sophisticated palate, as a Chicago music lover here, what do I need to know about the Toronto music scene? What is it that makes it shine? What makes it worth listening to or checking in on some of the bands that are there?
Oh, man. I mean, there's so much to know about the Toronto music scene. I feel like the more I travel and the more I play music in the world, the more I realize that Toronto is actually extremely special and has something amazing going on. I don't think it's dissimilar to Chicago. I think, like, Chicago is the one place I've been where I've felt like the musicians I've met have a similar mindset to the musicians in Toronto. I think that there's something in Toronto where, you know, there isn't this interest in becoming successful. Like, it isn't this, you know, how many Facebook followers do you have approach to music at all. No one is thinking about that. And there's a lot of spaces, though some of them are imperiled right now, but there's a lot of spaces. There's this place called the Transact where a lot of people I know, including myself, kind of came up where there's a lot of improvisation. There's a lot of shows, you know, constantly going on. And, you know, there might be two people in the audience, but it doesn't matter because people are meeting and forming bands and forming new bands. And I know so many people who have like 12 different bands that they've created. And there's just this very open and free and wild way of creating music in Toronto. And it's hard to even explain. There's a lot of like jazz, like very strange jazz in Toronto and very strange, like R&B kind of in Toronto that kind of makes no sense. And then like, yeah, like I feel like there's so much to the Toronto music scene and every once in a while a band appears and kind of takes off and everyone's like, oh, right. But you know, there's so much more bubbling beneath the surface. That's amazing.
Well,
so,
one of the best that come out of Toronto is the folk outfit, the Weather Stations, which is Tamara Lindemann, who is my guest tonight. She's up for a Juno Award for Contemporary Roots Album of the Year, and she'll be at Metro on March 10th, opening up for Bahamas. Tamara, thanks so much for taking some time out to talk to us tonight. We really appreciate it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
There was a time you put your hand on the small of my back. I was surprised that you touched me like that. But there in your hand was a current of life I could hardly stand. I stayed still and I didn't imagine it. If I did, I'd have made some joke of it. It was strange how I could feel so sane, so plain when you're around. Colored rose and easy. Yeah, I could see it so simple, unsubtle, impossible, clearly and strange, far and as close as a mountain range. On the horizon, driving all day, there I was so sane, so plain after everything.
All right, coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, we're playing Never Have I Ever. Never Have I Ever Been to the Southside Irish Parade. It has to replace snorkeling. I've been saying, Pete knows this, every time we play this game, and we play this game where it's simple, where I say, you can text in or call in and tell us what you've never done. Usually it leads to stimulating conversation, and maybe we'll get Rob or Roger Badish to be the judge, and the winner gets a pizza. How about that? But I usually say, never have I ever gone snorkeling. And this past weekend, I can't believe it's already been a week, but I was in Jamaica, and I had a chance to go snorkeling, and it haunts my dreams. No. Saw a stingray. How cool is that, right? Pretty cool. And I rode it. I just rode it all the way. It took me right back to shore. The worst and most humiliating part of the whole thing was when you get to the boat. You know, it's pretty humiliating anyway because you're not a very strong swimmer. And, you know, I had problems with my mask. I get a little, you know, so these Jamaican guys are like, you're fine, man. You're okay. And you get back to the boat and there's the ladder and you kind of pull yourself up. And there's no way to look cool because you got like a little life preserver around your belly, you know, and the thing, you got the mask on your face. And I was trying to get up there and I was like, and the guy's like, come on, man. Like he got mad at me for not being like a man to get in the boat fast, the wooden boat, the shack boat. I was like, no, I know, man. I just hurt my shoulder from lifting weights so much. That's it. That's why I can't get leverage here. I lift weights a lot. All right. Coming up, we play Never Have I Ever. And there are already some good stuff coming in for pizza. So stay with us. Right, time to play Never Have I Ever here on the download, 312-981-7200. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is the game we play for pizza. We learn about each other. We really learn about each other. As I was saying, I had a chance to take on one of my nevers. So I got to go snorkeling. And the 847 just told me they went snorkeling, and they came, wouldn't say face-to-face, but close to a band of barracudas. I don't know, man. I don't like that. There's a part of it when you're doing it that you realize quickly as a human being how vulnerable you are because you can't move quickly left to right or see behind you. So you always kind of feel like maybe there's a barracuda hanging close, or that like while you're, it's just going to, it swims. So it's going to swim right next to you and you'd be like, oh man, there's nothing I can do here. But then there's also part of you that's like, calm down, use your fists. You'll be fine. Like, you know what, if you're going to take me on, I'm also going to get one in.
Do you think, though, that you could be a little calmed by this just because, you know, this is you're not the first person to ever go snorkeling in Jamaica.
That's,
you know,
I do that all the time. It's like I remember when I was 21 and I went to New York City for the first time. I came back to Chicago and I was telling my friends, I'm like, so it's an island. So what it is, there's burrows. I'm the first person in the world since I did it. And they didn't seem to care. They didn't at all say, watch out for fish.
Yeah.
You know, he gave you a spiel. It's like, relax. You're fine. You're breathing. You might get some stuff in your nose. Also, at the same time, chill out.
Yeah. I mean, if people are getting attacked by barracudas all the time.
There'd be a sign in the water saying, watch out for barracudas. Right? 815 says, you're not the top of the food chain in saltwater. Yeah, I know. But, you know, still. You let that kind of go away, but yeah. The one thing they told you to do is don't put your fins down because you wear fins on your feet. So don't stand, because if you stand on the coral and break it, you know, it's bad for the coral and it might sting you or whatever. So I was always worried about that. I don't want to ruin the environment.
Damage the ecosystem.
Yeah, I didn't want to damage the ecosystem. That was my big thing. I did not want to be that guy who like breaks a chunk off. Oh, dunk. This has been here for millions of years, and I just broke it because I'm a spaz. I'm spazzing around with my fins. So that was something that was the only thing. So anyway, All right, 312-981-7200. I have to change my... That's what I was thinking. I got to change my snorkeling. Never have I ever. I had a couple here. Never have I ever been to a college basketball game.
Really?
Yeah, I've never went to like in a gym like that. I've done professional. I've seen the Bulls, but I've never seen a college basketball, Northwestern, Loyola, any of that. So like right now is the time that I think about it because it's March Madness,
mm-hmm.
and that always looks cool to be in one of those. You know what? Completely take that back. I'm losing it in my old age. When I was young, when I was 24, 23 years old, I was dating a girl, and her dad wanted to meet me. We were only dating for like a month, so it was kind of weird. And so we went to the United Center to watch NCAA round one. They were
wow,
at the, you know what I mean?
A,
like
that's a good date.
And you get to go like four, they do like four games mm-hmm. back to back to back to back and that kind of thing. And we sat, I think it might have even been in a box. Can't remember. I just remember it's just like me and him and his daughter, and it was kind of weird, and we didn't really talk much. He was a Purdue guy, and Purdue was playing. They were like a number one seed, and I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go. Like all mop toppy and like, it's 9 o'clock. It's nice to meet you. I like sports.
What was the seating arrangement? Were you in
I don't even remember.
See in the middle?
I don't remember. And I remember that it kind of, the relationship kind of went sour. I forgot. Like, it was one of those where we didn't really break up. It just kind of tapered off. And then this is the fun part of the story, that she was going to spring break in Colorado. I remember that for like, you know, this was real early 20s. And so surprised me at my work, right? Showed up right before to go, hey, you got something to talk? And this is before cell phones. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, what is this? And she's like, I just want to make sure we're broken up. That was what she wanted to do. She's like, so I got dumped at work.
Because
she's like, I'm about to go on this trip, you know, and I want to go on it single, and I just want to make sure we're on the same page that this is over. Because it really was one of those things that just kind of ghosted and ended. And I was like, no, you didn't even, yeah, all right, cool.
Well, kudos to her for showing up, for at least doing that.
Right?
Yeah.
So there you go. So I take that one off my list. Never have I ever seen an episode of Walking Dead. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Nor Knott's Landing. So I haven't seen either of those. So
is there a new Knott's Landing?
No,
or the
just
original?
Back in the day. Like, I never saw any of Falcon Crest. I missed all those.
So Lorenzo Lamas?
No, he doesn't hold much in my heart. Dynasty, I saw a couple of those. And everything else in the world I've done. So let's go to the listeners.
there's always people with, you know, because there's so much TV out there. You know, there are always people with like, I've never watched Game of Thrones.
Yeah, that's an easy one. Yeah. 3773 says, never have I ever driven downtown. Wow. A lot of people have that, you know, they say they've been downtown. They say they always take the bus or the train. And I can get that because I think when I was younger and growing up in Wonder Lake, we would never drive downtown. It would always take the Metro or park somewhere and then get downtown by bus or something like that.
Yeah, like I don't think my mom has ever driven herself downtown.
Oh, really?
I mean, she would either take the bus or my dad would drive.
Yeah. I feel, and once I've done it, now I live down here, I mean, I feel like it's second nature to be downtown. I always think about that too, because whenever I hear anyone go, San Francisco traffic is crazy, or LA traffic, oh my God, New York City, who could even drive? I'm like, yeah, but once you get a hang of it, like here in Chicago, it's the same thing anywhere. I remember when I once lived in Bucktown, I had a car, and I would go from Bucktown, I'd get on at Armitage and take the Kennedy and bumper to bumper every morning at 8:30 just to Ohio to go downtown or whatever, because it was still the fastest way to go. And talk about like just how much stress that adds to your life to just do that for 10 minutes a day, just for the only reason it's the fastest way to go. So I'll just get on this thing every day, like bumper to bumper both ways. And I was like, what kind of masochistic garbage is that to like do that?
Every once in a while I drive, and you know, I'm so grateful that I don't have to drive in to work. Because every once in a while you get into rush hour traffic, and it's like, I can't even imagine having to do this every day and every night. It takes years off your life.
It does. And I told you the other day, like that Monroe Street Bridge is out now for a year and a half. So it's not that I can't find alternate routes to get around, because you can take other places. That was my route. But traffic is recognizing it. meaning a lot of people are recognizing it. So they're all flooding the other spots, and it's causing, especially when it was raining the other morning. I did that thing where I just kept jumping block to block to block. I think I went all the way up to like Chicago Avenue to get downtown. Like, I mean, from all the way down at Harrison. Like, I went all the way up because every eastbound way into downtown was traffic jammed. Just imagine that. Like that. It's just, yeah, it adds stress to your life. So you're not missing anything, I guess, is the point with the person who's never driven downtown.
We used to drive that Lakeshore Drive and then the Stevens into a job. Lakeford or somewhere where I live up north, and I would get really, like, I wouldn't drive mostly, so the person that I was driving was not a good rush hour driver. Ugh. In that couldn't deal with just sitting in traffic, right. Had to like get off left, and like do move. So like, oh yeah, man, right. It's all backed up, I gotta get off at Lawrence and take the side streets and then, you know, all the side streets are backed up too. It's like it takes you so long and
you're
stops
done.
It's like, oh,
you've given up on life when you've taken a side street. When you get off at Lawrence to take a side street, you've made the wrong choice.
Like, yeah, just like, let's deal with it, it'll break up by like Fullerton or something, you know, like
there's no other option. Oh, I know, that's and my favorite thing is when that's why I will always prefer, and I don't have, you know, this is not necessarily an endorsement, but I'll prefer and rush hour cab drivers over rideshare, because cab drivers know how to A, get around and do that kind of side street stuff, and they also are much more comfortable with being jerks.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Can,
like,
yeah,
they're the ones that are like, I'm going to go up on the shoulder and then come back. And I don't care if you beep at me. I don't care. And, you know, I'm the worst when I'm the driver and there's a cab driver doing that. I'm like, look at this guy.
Yeah.
But when you're in the cab, you're like, look at this guy. That's how it works. 312-981-7200. A lot of stuff coming in right now. So we're going to have a lot of fun here. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll get to your Never Have I Ever. Stay with us. Playing Never Have I Ever tonight, 312-981-7200. Why don't we kick it off with Jim? Jim, ready for never? What have you never done?
I've never been to a Blackhawks game, and I've been a fan since 1976.
Oh. Jim, I would
say, lived in Chicago my whole life.
That's interesting. And I would say this, and I'm you know, obviously biased because we're the broadcast partners in the home, but I would put the Blackhawks game, the experience, at the top of the experiences you can have with professional sports in Chicago. I really do, because they started off the ice, they paint the ice with lights, so you get the American flag on there, and then they do the national anthem where everyone cheers along, and there's so much going on, and then they have actually a couple of breaks, so, you know, if you want to... if hockey's not your thing, there's a lot of other things going on at the United Center. That's why I like it. So that's a good one. Thanks, Jim.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good. Are they expensive tickets to go to a Blackhawks game? Similar to everything else?
Yeah, I think they're average.
Yeah, I would do that.
Yeah,
I would
fun.
Make that happen. And now the United Center is, they have connected the entire block there. So from all the way almost to, I mean, really from Wood to Damon is the United Center, because they connected the Advocate Center where they practice, and then they got shops and a restaurant, and that where the Michael Jordan statue used to be outside the United Center is now indoors.
Yeah, I couldn't believe when you
I know
that.
That's crazy. 219 says, never have I ever had to have my wisdom teeth pulled because I was born without them. Lucky me.
Yeah.
You could still have wisdom teeth and not have them pulled.
Right.
I think I'm in that situation.
Yeah, me too.
I have them, but I didn't get them pulled. I mean, maybe it'd be a vanity project later in life. Maybe I'll get... if I
skinny up your jaw.
Yeah, like if I get really rich, I'd be like, you know what? You can take them out. Why not? Never have I ever ridden in a car with both of my parents where my mom was driving. That's an old school thing, right?
Yeah.
Because I haven't had that issue, but I bet you I had... If I went to my grandparents, my grandpa always drove, right? I don't know. Never have I ever not been yelled at when I tell people I don't like chocolate. What? I have a family in which chocolate is God.
Yeah,
and
as well it should be.
Yeah, and I don't subscribe to that notion.
Really?
Yeah,
and you're
not
a fan?
I'm a terrible food orderer. And in the way that I always had this problem where I get really kind of intrigued by the menus, and that this is also when I order regular food, but when I get to desserts, if I was not pressured by the fam to get chocolate stuff, I'm always the guy that's like, oh, what's that cherry turnover? You know, like I'm always trying what is a mascarpone? Oh, and you're like, all right, dude, you gotta go. It's all chocolate. So the chocolate is king in my household. So I feel your pain in the way that I don't necessarily, I like it, I don't hate it.
Yeah, yeah. But you won't always go to that
I'll take a creme brulee.
Yeah,
any day.
There's issues that I have with ordering, like on the Grubhubs and the DoorDashes, is that especially if I'm alone, like if I'm doing it myself, there's been times where like, oh, I'll just order something, you know, my wife is gone for the night or whatever, and then I just like and spend 3 hours looking.
I know, right?
You know, and they can't decide. I have 14 different things in the cart, and then I'm like, you know, I'm shutting it down. I'll have it like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Go to bed.
I just did that exact same thing with a frozen pizza the other day. I did the same thing, and I did it in a way that I wasn't that hungry. So I justified, like, this would be, I'm just going to explore. Explore what Uber Eats has.
Yeah.
And I was just sitting there, and nothing really grabbed me, but I'm like, well, that's good. Well, maybe for later, that's good.
Yeah.
And then I ended up making the tombstone. What is with that? That's probably everybody. Everybody relates to that. All right. 608 says, never have I ever been to Vermont. Only state including Alaska and Hawaii I've not been. I should go. I've been to Vermont. Beautiful. I've been there a couple times. That's if you can get there when the snow's down, and they have, if you like really nice pine trees,
mm-hmm,
and skiing and maple syrup.
Yeah, I love all that stuff.
And hills, you're going to love it.
Yeah.
You're going to love it.
That's a lot of states. I think he's been in 47 states.
All right. I'm close to that. Do you know that? Like, my family, my parents were very, they were very disciplined to doing a family trip every summer, and the road trip was most of the time. And they would try different long trips with the map, so we would go, you know, I'm trying to do that with my family for the summer. I just don't think I'm going to get it together, even though I've already kind of mapped it out to go. I was telling Martyr, to go up to through Canada to Montreal, back down through New York to Boston, maybe fly from Boston back to Chicago. But the point being that I want to hit all the Vermonts and New Hampshires and Canada through
like
that.
Nice little trip to the Northeast. Yeah.
And I've done that, and I've done where my weaknesses are the Carolinas. Like, I've never gone south of Washington D.C. Mm-hmm. So I've been to Atlanta, but like the Carolinas north and south, I haven't hit. So that's the one area where you're like, oh, I got to get over there. Right, Charleston or something like that.
Yeah, and like Asheville is like, you know, the new hipster hub.
And you know me. Super new. I think that's it, though. I mean, because I did Montana, Idaho, Washington, Oregon. I've done Nebraska, the Dakotas. So
now,
I feel like
this is an actual visit, not just a drive-through.
Well, I mean, no, you're on a road trip, so you'll stop.
Stop and do historical marker of some sort. Yeah.
You know, Mount Rushmore or something like that. But I feel like the only places that it's just the Carolinas and then Alaska. I haven't been to Alaska or Hawaii as well. So there you go. We're on the same boat. All right. Let's keep going here. Got a couple seconds here. 847 says, I grew up in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, and have sailed and boated on it. My parents never did. 219 says, this is Jim. Hey, Jim. Never have I ever been on a city bus or the L. Okay. The 219, so you're not missing anything. Everyone who's on those city buses right now are like, man, why am I on this city bus? I do it all the time where I'm just like, oh, man, what? Gosh, I wish I wasn't on this bus right now. might have a front runner here. 414 says, never have I ever seen a sunrise. Ooh, that's a thinker. I feel like I have.
Yeah.
Sunsets, no issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the waking hour. You're okay there, right? But sunrise, you got to get up early and do that.
Or you're just rolling in from the night before.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen those.
When I went on my honeymoon, we went to Tulum in Mexico, just the south of Cancun, you know, and it's beautiful. All they talk about is like, oh, you got to check out the sunrise. It's the greatest thing. And, you know, we're on our honeymoon, you know, it's like every day, like the alarm goes off. You want to go out there and look at the sun?
Snooze.
Nah. We'll catch it next. It's a sun. It's a round.
Yeah, but at least you both were on the same page, though.
Yeah.
Oh, it's
yeah.
kind of a bummer when one yeah. goes, oh, come on, come on.
Yeah, can you
come
imagine?
On, come on, come on.
The lady's up. She's got her clothes on. You're
come
like,
on, Pete.
No, let's wait more 10 more minutes.
And it was, It'll be there. I mean, literally 5 feet out of our plate. You know,
but
we
sunrise
had to do nothing.
It messes with your head more than sunset because sunrise just means the sun's going to be there for the next 12 hours or whatever. You know what I mean? So I always feel like, you know, sun will be, if I want to see it, it'll be right there. The sunset, at least, you're like, it's then dark. So I just feel like, even though I know it's pretty, it psychs me out to be like, man, if I wait 15 minutes, it'll be just here, and that's good enough. So, but I feel like I've seen it, right? I think we've all seen it.
Yeah.
That's a, that, to me, is a front runner.
That's a good one.
Yeah. All right, we got more. 312-981-7200. We're playing for pizza tonight. Never have you ever not never ever done. Yeah, I'll figure it out. Playing Never Have I Ever tonight. Before we get back into it, Rob, that, we talked about it, Pete, that the Penn State beats Ohio State tonight, right? Penn State beat Northwestern. That's Northwestern's job. That was Northwestern's job. Penn State is playing themselves into a possible tournament berth by getting these quality wins right at the end, which is what Northwestern needed to do. It could have been them, Rob. Could have been them.
Could have been. Should have been.
But at least that's how it works, right? If we see Penn State make the tournaments because they beat Ohio State today.
Something tells me Chris Collins won't feel much better.
Yeah, right.
Maybe a little.
That my dad taught me that. I remember when DePaul used to be in the early 80s, DePaul had some teams where they would get there, and one year they had a late-night game that could barely stay up for. And I remember Danny Ferry was on the Duke Blue Devils, and I think the Demons got to play them in a second round maybe, and Duke won. And the next game, I was so upset, and the next game in the Sweet 16, Duke won, and I got mad. Right? I got mad. I'm like, oh, I wanted them to lose. My dad was like, no, you want them to win because that shows that the winning team beat you along the way. So that's the idea, right? So you want Penn State to go all the way because then you're like, ah, oh, we didn't win because Penn State was actually pretty good.
Yeah, you know, there's logic to that.
Yeah. But we also want Penn State to lose. So, all right. 312-981-7200. We're playing Never Have I Ever tonight. 219 says, never have I ever seen the movie Office Space. We're missing out. That's a funny movie. Mike Judge. Gosh, that movie is so good. And it's also one of those that's just quoted like crazy. You should check that one out. It's probably... They used to run, you know why everybody's seen that movie? Didn't they run that like crazy on Comedy Central? Like it was just always on. So you could pick it up anywhere. The, what do you call it? The censored version. When I first saw that movie, it's, I remember I got it, and it had a terrible, if you remember, it had a terrible cover. It was like a guy in a, with a briefcase, and it was like post-it notes all over him, and you're just like, oh, right, an office. It's so cliche. And I remember getting the movie and watching it, and I didn't know much about it. And the scene right at the beginning when they're showing the main characters, and the one guy's in his car listening to gangster rap. And he's rapping along, and he's swearing. And then a guy is out there, a black guy with the sign or whatever, and he rolls up his window. He turns the music down. I was like, that's hilarious. I thought that was a perfect way to start that movie, and I'm like, you kind of got me. I want to see what this is about. So, all right, 312-981-7200. I will say this: there's a lot of people have texted in about snorkeling. 224 says, went snorkeling in Jamaica a few years ago, and came face to face with a small stingray, then an eel. Both times, slowly backed up. I will not go in water outside. They follow up with a great line and something about I lost it in the sea of. It said last time I will. Oh, no more snorkeling. Time to go back to U.S. waters. They have eel in U.S. waters as well. I'm just going to throw that out. All right. 312-981-7200. Let's see. Never have I ever seen The Shining. The Shining was just on. I just saw it on. It was on one of the. It might have been when I was in Jamaica. I was watching TV. Yeah. 224 once again says Office Space. That's two Office Space. All right. lot of people telling me which direction to go. There's just a slew of texts in that are telling me which direction to take on the road trip coming in that I was just talking about.
Oh, yeah. Like, what are they suggesting?
Well, they said they went through Canada, through Vermont, Boston area, Jersey, west on I-80, all 2 weeks. Canada, need to visit Ontario Place, Toronto, the Expo Exhibit Park in Montreal. Peter in Sauk Village is saying that. And then go to Bar Harbor, Bahaba. See the sunrise from the Cadillac Mountain and Acadia National Park.
Oh, man, that sounds beautiful.
Yeah, doesn't it? That's a little bit of both.
Yeah, I'm talking sunrise. Do that up. What's why do you don't think you're going to be able to do this with the logistics of it to get everything together? Yeah. So
we're thinking we'd have to rent a car, and it's just a fine. Like when you start going down a list of how much it would cost to do that trip, it's not. You know, I like the finer things, Pete. I'm a 4-star guy. No. 847 says, never have I ever listened to you for your entire show.
All right.
They said it's not a judgment on the content. It's just 4 hours long.
Yeah, of course. Who's got that kind of time?
Who's got that kind of time? We barely have that kind of time. I can't see what this person is talking about.
The full shows are also available for download on the following day if you're so inclined.
Yeah, you can just sign up through Apple or iTunes or any of the places and get to all the segments. It's amazing. Think about how many segments go through. Anyway, 312-981-7200. I'm going to go back to some of the ones I have. I've never been to Northerly Island. Have you?
I have.
Like for where they're don't they have a concert venue out there? I've never been out there.
I've never been to that concert venue, but I used to belong to a dog walking group where we'd like get up in the morning and walk our dogs in a pack, and that was one of the locations. But I've never been to like the amphitheater there.
Yeah,
see like Earth, Wind, and Fire or something.
Yeah,
I always
want
to go. Yeah,
or like Jason Aldean or something like that, right? 815 says, I spent way too much time in bars, but never have I ever been in one on New Year's Eve, Halloween, or St. Patrick's Day. Oh, that's a good one.
They're good ones to avoid. Good days to avoid.
They're also, though, they're great days to avoid, especially if you're a drinker not for delight. If you're a drinker because you have a problem or whatever, or you're a day drinker and you belong to a club that's at the local bar, you hate those dates, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than people dressed up like the tennis player from Tenenbaums, drinking a Heineken next to you on your favorite spot.
We have a favorite bar that we go to, the Hop Leaf. It's up near where we live.
Yeah, I love that place.
Yeah, it's great. And we kind of have like our seats that we like, you know, kind of very normish, you know. If they have like an event where they, you know, there's a lot of people there, I get angry.
Yeah, you don't like it?
I'm like, why are they here? What are they doing here? Those are our seats.
I had a run where I was an honorary because I worked, but I kind of was an honorary bar regular. My buddy was, and he was really into it. Like he was really into doing day drinking.
Mm-hmm.
At Lemmings in Bucktown.
Yeah.
Great place, right?
Yeah, of course.
But the issue with Bucktown and Lemmings at the time is that you go in there and those guys were so great. There was such a great crew. That's the crew we went to Def Leppard with. That was a good time. And you get a chance to go in there watching a Cubs game or something and you're just like, this is how bars are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But it turned over at night into something else because it's Bucktown and there's a different clientele. There's even different people who work the bar.
Yeah, of course.
And so if you were like, you know, I lived right around the corner, I'd be like, oh, let's go over to Lemmings and see the crew at 9 o'clock. They're gone. Everyone's gone. It's a whole different thing. And my buddy left. He moved. He actually went to the Army, went to Iraq, came back. And we're like, let's go to Lemmings. And we're like, the way it worked out, we had to go at night. And he showed up and he was ready to go and no one was there. And at one point or another, he was having such a good time and he was like doing Lemmings that the bouncer came over and was like, we need you to calm down, sir. And I'm like, this is the guy. What are you talking about? This guy like does barbecues behind your bar and
he's like
is the leader. He's the ringleader. And you're acting like he's just a Bucktown sauced up. I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is betrayal.
So this bar too. Like we go maybe once every couple weeks. So once a week, maybe. There'll be a guy at the door and I'll say like, you know, check your ID, which is fine. You know, they have to do it. I understand. But then there's a couple guys. I'll go like, you know, your way around. again, just being nice, you know, but I'm like, really? Yeah,
I know.
I mean, really? I don't know. They see a lot of people.
I helped lift a pool table, right? That's the thing where you're like, come on. No, you remember me? I helped you. Yeah, that's always how it is. 224 says, you know about that sport of crawling through minuscule cave tunnels where you can only go forward on your stomach? Never, ever going to happen, as I have claustrophobia, thanks to my sister when we were playing hide and seek. Shut the drawer I was hiding in an upstairs closet and took off. Trapped me in there. What? My mom, a while later, finally heard me shouting for help and let me out. So no small spaces. Wow. Yeah, that sounds like trauma. I apologize for that on behalf of all of the Download Nation. Maybe you could get in a spot where you're like, okay, I'm going to try it again. I'm going to try to overcome. Although, make sure people are around you. Something like that. 224 says, I'm 47 years old, never had a cup of coffee. But coffee is one of my favorite ice cream flavors. What? Yeah, coffee flavored ice cream is not coffee. So you're not, don't worry about that. You know, I feel like that's a misnomer. Whenever you have coffee ice cream, it doesn't taste anything like coffee. So it's like, oh, I don't drink coffee. I won't have this coffee ice cream. Like, they're entirely different flavor palettes. They're totally different. All right. And 630 says, never have I ever hated a Steve Gadlin invention. Bring him back soon. Yeah, I'll get a plug-in for Steve Gadlin's Star Makers, which starts on CanTV coming up in a week or so. Check him out there. I love Steve. He's got to come back. He's a busy guy. He's a television producer now. So we got to... Once he goes to Hollywood and or Broadway, we will hopefully get him back for some celebrity inventions for the frying pan. All right, 312-981-7200. We'll take our last break here, and then we'll come back. We'll get you Jim on the line, and there's some other texts in, and we will give away one of these pizzas. So stay with us. Playing Never Have I Ever tonight. 312-981-7200. 708 says, never have I ever understood my phone bill. That's a good one. All right. Never have I ever understood the NFL overtime rules. 708. Oh, that's a good one. Never, 312 says, never have I ever had a pizza from any other place than Giordano's, and before that, Father and Sons. Well, then you have had it from two places, but that's good. Gosh, man, that's weird. I would think that you'd have pizza from all... I don't know. I feel like that's part of the fun of Chicago. You can go to different places. I'm searching for a new pizza place right now. I love Melnati's, and that's a big... And not just because they sponsor the show or they're here, but I have one close by. But I also am a D'Agostino's guy from back in the day. So, I feel like right now I need to really capture the heart and soul of my 10-year-old. And he's a pizza. He's starting to come around on pizza. He likes it. And so I'm like, all right, let's get some tavern style pizza.
Yeah, take him out to Vito and Nick's.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm thinking.
That's what I'm talking about. We're in a we love Melnati's. It's the best. But we're in a Melnati's dead zone.
Mm.
There's one like in Evanston, and there's one in Lincoln Square, but they don't deliver to us.
That's no good. Yeah.
They deliver like a block away. So it's like, you know, can you meet me at the gas station?
The summertime, that's good, right? In the winter, that's even better. 815's got a possible winner here. Never have I ever changed my email password. Why would I? Why would an old password be easier to hack than a new one? I think you're missing the fundamental concept of when they hack your Earthlink or your Prodigy. 773 says, never have I ever wore pajamas to class in college. Okay. How about 773? He's got a slew of them here. Never have I ever owned a pet. I've got a little kitty right now. Doesn't really like me. It's annoying. Like, my wife sent me pictures when we were in Jamaica of, like, the cat hanging out. Just hanging on the couch, sprawled out.
When you're around.
And when I'm around, it's like the most, it's just, is the crazy, just hopped up cat that has to run as fast as possible, like a cartoon. Its feet can't go fast enough that the big man has walked in, and this could be my end of my life. It's like a cartoon. It's just like, it's so annoying. It makes me angry.
Are you giving off vibes? See, well, yeah, you probably sense your bad vibes.
Whatever. He probably does. I still feed him. 773 says, 608, 773 says, never used an alarm clock? Really? Never used Amazon Prime? Never owned a tie-dyed t-shirt? That's a good one. 608 says, Justin, a misnomer is an inept name for something, not a misconception. Oh, so I must have said, that's a misnomer. Yeah. I've been grammatically owned. Thank you for clearing that up. All right, let's go to Jim. Jim, what have you never done, Jim?
I've never flown on an airplane.
What? Do you travel a lot? Do you just
any kind of an aircraft, period.
Do you travel a lot? Do you just go on trains or...
I used to travel quite a bit.
Yeah, well, how would you do it?
Wheels.
Yeah, just in a car?
Car, bus, train.
My dad is he loves Amtrak. Loves it. And he'll fly, he doesn't care about flying, but he will take the extra hours to go on the train.
Oh yeah, the train's cool. It used to be really good when they had the smoking car and you could have a beer.
Yeah.
I used to catch Spirit of New Orleans. It used to run from Chicago to New Orleans.
Yeah, right.
And one of the stops was Champaign.
Oh, cool.
And they had a midnight train. It used to leave, right around midnight, leave Chicago, headed for New Orleans, and it was a party. Same thing coming back.
That's awesome.
You'd catch it early in the morning, and the people would still be up partying from the ride.
Party train. That's where the word party... It's also where the song, The Midnight Train to Champaign, comes from. The Gladys Knights and the Pips song. All right, thanks, Jim.
All righty, thank you.
I'm glad, Jim. You know, the other thing today, as Tina was talking about in their reload, the planes that were coming in that nor'easter, man, if you see video of that, they're like wobbly. That ain't right. That's where you're like, yeah, I don't want to be on that kind of stuff.
We have a relative in the family who does not fly, doesn't take air travel. So we don't see him unless he lives in Texas. So we don't see him unless we go down there. Yeah. Cause, and I don't think it's because he's scared because, he's a manly man. But I don't think he trusts,
the system.
The system, you know, doesn't like, having to give an ID or I don't even know, It's like, I think there's like some sort of conspiracy against,
I want to be that guy. Yeah. 262 says never took a selfie at the bean. You got to do that, man. 630 says never have I ever dropped acid. I haven't done that. I haven't done that because there was this. I wonder how much I really do have a fear of the unknown. Like I don't know. That doesn't appeal to me to be in a spot where things that look a certain way may not look that way anymore, and you're going to think you're being eaten by a dragon. I don't know. It's just like, I don't know. I don't know if I need it, right? And now I'm getting a slew of old school pizza joints to check out. So that's good. That's good to say it might be time to wrap up here. So thank you for the recommendations, everybody. All right, we're giving away a pizza. Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. Roger Badish, you around up there? Why don't we get Badish to be the judge on these three? I don't know if he's around because he's checking other stuff. Let's see. There he is.
I've been listening.
All right, good. We got a minute to wrap it up here, okay. So I'm going to give you the three. Ready?
All right.
One, never have I ever seen a sunrise. Two, never have I ever been to a bar on St. Patrick's Day, Halloween, or New Year's.
Yeah.
And three, never have I ever changed my email password.
Well, that's not so unusual.
Okay.
Because I fall into that same category.
All right. Baddish 1-2-3 is still rocking, huh?
1-2-3-4-5 ABC. Or password. Right. The second one, I'm sorry, that just week. You've been to a bar.
Yeah.
So it hasn't been on a holiday. Whoop-de-doo, you're still celebrating at home.
That's right.
I mean, seriously. Right. Come on. And what was the first one again?
Never have I ever seen a sunrise.
I really find that hard to believe, but
if it's
in a world where anything is possible, I'm going to have to say that is possible. Yeah. It is highly unusual.
But it's possible.
It's possible. I'll give them that.
All right. Here you go. Never have I ever seen a sunrise. Wins tonight. The Never Have I Ever. Thank you, Roger Baddish. And you get a pizza there. Thanks so much for playing. All right. We're going to wrap up tonight. And is Patty in tonight? She's been out the last couple nights.
I think it's Carmen Harry.
Carmen Harry. Awesome. All right. Take a break and we will get to them. Stay with us. Gonna do it tonight here on the download. Back on Monday, I'm actually hosting Cochran on Monday.
Big day for you, Justin.
And
Cochran.
Get this, I'm doing that, and I'm doing my show on Monday night too.
That's a stud right there.
Yeah, right.
That is a split doubleheader.
That's a split doubleheader. Good to see you, Harry. How are you?
It's great to be seen. It's fantastic. Never have I ever gotten to do crosstalk with you, Justin.
I know, and I feel like I don't even want you guys to start your show. I have so many sports questions. I have.
Go ahead.
Boom it.
Their name are the Bulls.
I don't care about the Bulls. That's the one team right now that I'm like, I'm full in on the rebuild. They can go away for a little bit.
The big win tonight.
Chicago Bears. Let me ask you about the Bears. Do you like what they're doing in the way that they're releasing all these guys and getting rid of these players and with $80 million, do you trust that this team can turn the corner with the Ryan Pace and everybody with all this money and the free agents that are out there?
Okay, I'll start. I like the head coaching choice. I'm glad they moved on from John Fox. I think everything you read about Matt Nagy is positive. I think that Ryan Pace, I like honesty in life, Justin, myself, at least every now and then. And I would like him to stand up there. Personally, I would feel better. Say, you know what? I completely blew it with Mike Glennon. I would just like to hear that the whole, you know, we're just going to take swings. And yeah, that was an awful swing. And you cost the franchise $18.5 million for four starts. It was just ridiculous.
Now, Harry, some would say that you're going to have to pay a quarterback that will regardless.
Oh, yeah.
So it could be anybody at that point, right?
Right. I mean, just the Mike Glennon thing was ridiculous. I mean, last year, you know, the Vikings had a backup quarterback, a third string backup quarterback, who came in and saved their season, who was getting paid like $2 million.
Right.
We gave a guy $18 million.
Terrible.
Who played four games, who was awful. But, as far as, like, do I like what they're doing? I think Bears fans have, like, what do hostages get? The Stockholm syndrome.
Right.
I think that Bears fans have the Stockholm syndrome. And I want to believe that our kidnappers are going to do the right thing.
I don't know. There's a couple of free agents out there. The Jarvis Landry wants out of Miami.
Yeah.
Honey Badger, the safety in Arizona, wants out of Arizona. I'm like,
Tyrone Matthew.
I feel like there's, with $80 million, Chicago, everything looking up, that there could be some high-quality players coming through here. And I'm optimistic.
Right? See, but here's the thing, though, is the Bears are looking for linebackers that will get PED suspensions.
Right.
They're looking for guys, receivers, that will get like a hairline fracture in the second week and stay out for the year. It's hard to find those guys.
It's hard to find those guys.
Kyle Fuller's an interesting decision there. Are they
going
to pay him or they're not going to pay him?
I don't know. What do you think?
I'd franchise Kyle Fuller because to your point, they have a ton of dough. So for those not in the football nerdy contract thing, that means that you're going to overpay him for 1 year and let's see if you can do it again.
Right.
And then at that point, okay, I'll go a long-term deal with Kyle Fuller. But this guy's had struggled to stay healthy, but he had a great year last year.
Yeah, he did, man. So what do you guys got coming up tonight?
We
4 hours.
Three hours of
Kyle Fuller talk.
We're going to talk Kyle Fuller. No, we're going to talk about how do you get on a plane properly.
Okay, good.
I think that's a very key.
There was a guy who just called us that had never been on a plane before, so maybe you can give him some tips.
Well, you know,
maybe he meant like a flat, you know, surface, like a hill, like the Rain in Spain type
of
plane.
Or maybe like a mental space.
Oh, that's good.
On a plane. I've never
been
on that plane.
I mean, the president is under fire here for not getting on a plane properly. I think we need to discuss that. I also, I was at the Improv Olympic tonight, Justin.
Yeah, how was that?
I Have you ever done anything like that? I know that yes. your son is... You
no, have, I've done plenty of it, man. I did improv for a long time.
Yeah. It's okay. That's a whole thing.
That's a whole thing.
Right? Do you miss it? You don't do it now,
I
do
don't. You know, and I've done improv. I don't really like it. I like scripted stuff. I like writing it out and or at least getting up there with an idea what you're going to do. Improv is kind of like off the ledge. I don't like okay. that as much. Yeah. But yeah.
Most of the time.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like, I always miss it. It's the bright lights. You like it.
Yeah.
Do you okay. like it? Did you like it?
I mean, I just told a story and then they improvised off me.
That's
but,
great.
But so I'm up there and I'm looking out and there's the lights are on you. Like, and I, you know, there's people in the crowd. It's just a different animal than sitting here yeah, in right. a room and talking to you, which doesn't seem the least bit confronting.
Carm was shocked that he went to a club and there were people in the crowd.
Yeah, I was. I really was. Why would
oh
you people
my
be here?
God.
That doesn't make any sense.
We don't have any people in the radio studio.
So what did they say about your car getting stolen from Highland Park?
I should have told that story. That's what I should have told.
That's a great story.
I don't know why I didn't tell
it. He told two mighty fine stories.
I did tell two mighty fine
right,
stories.
So you can save it for them.
Okay.
He was great.
I wish I was there, man. Yeah, we were on the air. Darn it.
You see, I did improv for a long time. Yeah. I did stand up even longer.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, here's what I miss is the between shows, all the girls at the bar that are, like, easier to talk to when they've seen you on stage.
Yeah, that goes both ways, though, because there'll be times you go up there and you're like, hey, what'd you guys think? They're like, it was okay. And then you're like, oh, I don't feel as good as I thought.
I had a new comic come up to me once, and he goes, you know, those girls are only talking to you because they just saw you on stage. I'm like, yeah, and I have no problem with that.
That's when you go, and that's why I was on stage, right? Yeah.